Nancy, you ready? We'll come to order, please. Nancy, do roll call, please.
Hello?
Yeah.
Hold on.
I only drove the head.
Captain Dockett?
Here.
Mr. Holly?
Here.
Mr. Jasko?
Here.
Mr. Kupczynski?
Here.
Mr. Kupczynski?
Here.
Vice Chair Matt?
Here.
Chair McColton?
Here.
Dr. Zulot? Here. Mr. Curtis?
Here.
Mr. Brooks? Mr. Walton?
Here.
Four.
Thank you very much. Pursuant to Section 5 of the Open Public Meetings Act, this meeting has been duly advertised in accordance with law by publication in the official newspapers of the borough and by posting at Borough Hall by the Borough Clerk as part of the annual notice. This meeting is a quasi-judicial meeting. Any comments or questions must be limited to issues that are relevant to what the board may legally consider in reaching a decision. Decorum appropriate to a judicial hearing must be maintained at all times. We're going to rise now for a sign of prayer and pledge of allegiance.
I pledge allegiance to the United States of America, to the Republic of America, one nation, under God, indivisible, with liberty and justice for all.
All right, at this time, we're going to open the floor for any public comments. Those comments are for anything except what is we're going to hear tonight. Do we have any on Zoom? The comments are for anything but the application, other than the application we're going to hear tonight.
That's not the way it was advertised.
That's the way it's going to happen.
Any on Zoom? Okay, thank you very much. Okay, we'll move on to our application, PB 2302, Callion, 161st Ave, Block 101, Lot 4.01.
Mr. Chairman, I've reviewed service in connection with this application. The service is in order. The board does have jurisdiction to hear the application. And I'm aware of the following exhibits that the board has received thus far in connection with the application. They include Exhibit A1, it's a zoning review from your zoning officer, Michelle Clark, that's dated December 21, 2022. Exhibit A2 is a Monmouth County Planning Board application for site plan approval, that's dated February 7, 2023. Exhibit A3, an application for variance of Kalian Management LLC, that's dated February 6, 2023. Exhibit A4 is a boundary and topographic survey prepared by Insight Surveying, that's dated June 23, 2022, revised July 6, 2022. Exhibit A5, a preliminary and final major site plan prepared by Insight Engineering, that's dated January 23, 2023. Exhibit A6 is a stormwater management report that's prepared by Insight Engineering, that's dated January 30, 2023, revised April 6, 2023. Exhibit A7 are architectural elevation and floor plans prepared by GRO Architects. That's dated January 27, 2023. Exhibit A8 is review number one of CME Associates, your engineer. That's dated on April 5, 2023. Exhibit A9 is a traffic and parking study prepared by Dolan and Dean. That's dated February 14, 2023. Exhibit A10 is review number two from your engineer, CME Associates. That's dated May 25, 2023. And Exhibit A11 is a stormwater management area evaluation prepared by Whitestone. That's dated December 13, 2022. Those are the exhibits that I'm aware of thus far that the board has received in connection with the application. and Mr. Brodsky is here on behalf of the applicant.
Thank you, Mr. Stein. Good evening, Mr. Chair, members of the board. Rick Brodsky on behalf of the applicant, Kelly Management LLC. As the chair indicated, the application for tonight's hearing pertains to the property that's located at 160 First Ave, corner of First Ave and Garfield. This is stone throw from where we're seated. The property is in your CBD zone, and the board, I'm sure, is familiar with the applicants. The applicants are Kelly Management has their offices in town. They've built actually five buildings here in town, and so they, of course, as with all of their applications, they come in, they want to be good neighbors, they want to be responsive to concerns or comments that are raised, and to that, I guess it was about a year, sometime last year, they had come in before the board for an informal hearing, conceptual hearing. Again, the idea being gather as much feedback and input as possible to incorporate into the plan to attempt to address any comments, concerns, or what have you that are received. Similarly, as we've gone through the process before coming here tonight, CME, we've received a couple of review letters from CME, which again, always raise issues that the applicant is open to in terms of incorporating comments, suggestions, concerns, what have you, into the plan. And so we're hopeful that the board will see this evening that the end product of what's being proposed incorporates a lot of that stuff. The application before you is seeks preliminary final site plan approval for a mixed-use building. And that building would consist of four stories. First story would be retail, about 1,270 square feet or so of retail on the first floor, and then apartments for rental on floors 2 through 4. Total of 30 apartments that are being proposed. There will be amenities as part of that apartment building, gym and lobby, and there'll be a refuse room, mechanical room, and a trash room, and all of those things typically associated with a nice residential building. The site currently, as it exists today, is it's a single family retail building with a couple of tenants in it, including a liquor store. There are four access drives right now that access the site, and those will be removed, and what's proposed, as you'll see as we go through the plan, will be a single ingress and egress off of East Garfield. We'll go through the parking that's proposed, the 47 spaces that are proposed. In connection with the application, which, as you'll hear as we go through, the ratio of spaces to apartments is actually quite a bit higher than the ratios in the other five buildings that that have been built by this applicant. So there are some variances associated with the application, and we'll go through those during the context of the application. I have with me this evening a couple of witnesses. Leading off will be the project architect, Rich Garber, and he will walk the board through, give a nice overview of the project and with some specific details in terms of what's being proposed, and then also go into the architecture as well. I then have the project engineer, Pat Ward from Insight, who will go through some of the more technical engineering information and aspects of the application. Well, after that, we'll have our traffic engineer, who's here this evening to provide testimony with regard to traffic and parking and so forth. And we do have our professional planner as well, who will address the legal standards for the variances that are associated with the application. Aliens are here as well, and Patrick Martin is here, as well as his son Tyler. Not sure if we'll have testimony from them, but they're certainly, if you guys stump us, all of us with a question that we don't have the answer to, they'll help us out. And, you know, if something comes up that we need them to address, they're here as well. So, unless the board has any questions or see in any other fashion, what I'd like to do is have our architect, Mike, you want to swear in witness by witness?
Witness by witness.
That sounds good. Okay, so we'll have, let's have Mr. Garbush sworn in.
Sir, raise your right hand. Do you swear or affirm that any testimony given tonight should be this proceeding be the truth?
The whole truth and nothing but the truth.
I do. And state your name and address, please.
Richard Garber, G-A-R-B-E-R, last name, 83 Montgomery Street, Jersey City, New Jersey, 07302.
Okay. Mr. Garber, before I ask you to put the background experience on the record, Mike, we have a PowerPoint presentation. Should we mark that?
You have to mark it.
Yeah, I mean, should we mark it as a single document?
Yes.
How many pages? 31 pages. I guess that would be 812.
It's going to be 812. The cover page says 160 First Avenue, Atlanta County, New Jersey, 07716 GRO Architects PLLC.
That's it.
Dated July 18, 2023.
Okay, great. So, Rich, if you would, if you could just, for the record and the board, provide your background and experience as a licensed architect here in New Jersey.
Sure. I've been a licensed architect in New Jersey since 2006. Our firm works all over the state on various types of projects. Lately, it's primarily mixed-use and multi-family projects, as we are presenting here tonight. In addition to my professional credentials, I hold a teaching appointment at the School of the Department of Architecture at the University of Pennsylvania.
And Rich, I know you testified here before, actually in connection with this application, right, at the prior conceptual hearing, and a number of other boards throughout the state, correct?
Yes, multiple boards all over the state. Many times.
Okay. All right, so, Rich, if you would, why don't you just start off and go through what's been marked, the PowerPoint that's been marked with 812 and of course some of the other exhibits.
Sure. And I'd like the board to know, it's nice to see everyone, that on the 11 by 17 handouts that we provided everyone is exactly the same as what is on the screen. If for some reason you have a question, or you can't see the screen for some reason. So I start with a photo that I think I took this photo last fall of our site, and we outlined the site in the end. So everyone knows the liquor store, everyone sees the corner of East Garfield and First Avenue, so we're looking towards the water here. And you can see that there is a multifamily building of similar scale that is under construction here. That building is more complete now. There are some other images that we have that will speak to that as well. This is the approach on Garfield up to First Avenue, where you can see an existing curb cut into the site. That curb cut approximate location is being maintained. So all vehicular circulation into and out of the site will remain more or less in the same location as it currently exists. So there will be no cars entering or exiting the property from First Avenue. Now, this is a rendering that we have provided of the building, and we will talk quite a lot about this. And
please.
This is a rendering that we've provided that we're actually quite excited about, and we think that this rendering has a series of materials that actually mesh well with much of the context on the block. And so we'll return to this view, which again is a view right at the corner of Garfield and First Avenue. We'll talk a little bit about the massing sensitivities that we have here. Now, to start, this is our aerial photo, so you can see the subject property, which is a single-story, mid-story commercial building that will be demolished to make way for our structure. You see directly above us the new multifamily building, which is L-shaped. So the lot configuration is slightly different, but it has frontage on First Avenue and is also a corner property. And so these two residential projects actually will be bringing like a mixed-use building to this entire stretch of First Avenue, which I think is actually quite important. It's been spoken already by Mr. Rosky that we are in the CBD, and you see the location of the site, and you see your CBD district that is coded here in orange for location purposes. And then we thought we would add a transportation diagram. We do have a traffic expert just to speak, but this was a drawing, a graphic that we included when we first was before the planning board agreed last June 2022. It just shows a 1,000 diameter radius and various, the larger radius is 2,500, the inner is 1,000 foot diameter, so 500 foot radius. Just showing various points of both bus stations as well as the relationship of the project to the water, which is less than half a mile. Now, I thought I would read some proposed design key points into the record. Those design key points are up here, just so everyone understands what they're about to see graphically. The site is 19,905 feet, so just under 20,000 square feet, so it hasn't changed since we last came here. The occupancy we're proposing here is residential with mercantile, and then some parking, that's the S2. The zone is in the CBD, as has been discussed. And the proposed building height is 4 stories and 43 feet 11 inches. Now that height includes a request that we're making here tonight for a C variance. And a C variance, as the board knows, is 10 feet or 10%, whichever is less. Our maximum height here is 40 feet. We are proposing to go up a little bit higher to 43 feet 11 inches, and we'll show you some context photos as to what our thinking was for that. In terms of the unit counts, we are proposing 30 residential units here. Numbers 30, 6 of them would be designated affordable. We have 11 one-bedroom units, and that includes one affordable. There is a deviation sought for units under 750 square feet. We do have the smallest unit at 703, so slightly less. And then those units are listed here. We'll go into those in the floor plan. 17 two-bedroom units, of which 3 are affordable, and 2 three-bedroom units, of which 2 are affordable. We have another deviation we're asking for the three-bedroom units, because three bedrooms are not permitted per your land development ordinance, however, are required per CO standards, the affordable housing standards. So that's why we're requesting, and those 2 3 bedrooms that we are proposing are designated as affordable. In terms of parking, Mr. Brodsky talked about this a little bit too. We have 48 parking stalls proposed. And I say parking stalls, those are parking spaces. With our EV credit, that number raises to 55 spaces. Now, 64 are required. We are coming in with an application of 55 spaces. And so that gives us a 1.6-to-1 ratio. And I say this now because we will have some testimony to support our thinking behind this as well. In terms of those spaces, 2 of those would be dedicated ADA as required, accessibility. 21 standard spaces, with 5 of those being tandem, and we'll show you what that means in the site plan, as well as 25 compact spaces. We do have an elevator, obviously proposed in a building like this, so it's completely accessible, wheelchair accessible to all residences. The first floor is composed of a retail space that's about 1,270 square feet. That parking area that I just referred to, which is about 14,165, modest utility spaces, building infrastructure, about 1,000, and then a modest amenity space, 656 square feet. You will see on the top floor, the highest, the occupiable roof, I should say, not floor, is a common roof deck at just about 3,900 square feet, which we're excited about. Now, you also note that there's some notes here. So we requested and were before this board, I want to say sometime, I want to say June 30th, that they may be more or less back and forth a little bit, but somewhere in there, right before 4th of July, 2022. We requested a concept hearing by the board, and I noticed some of the board members were there then, so hopefully you'll remember that. And we did get some good feedback. We believe that all comments that were made by the board at that point have been incorporated into the design. And one of the biggest changes you'll see when I get to the site plan is the angling of our corner to make sure that we have clear vision for that right of way, for the cars basically that are turning off of Garfield onto First Avenue. We also have two review letters that we've worked to satisfy, and that includes adding those three bedroom units that I spoke about before. So, the zoning compliance chart, this is actually divided by Insight, or through between Artwork and Insight. We'll hear from Patrick in a second. And I'll just highlight the, we've just highlighted the deviations we're requesting. I talked about building height and max height in stories. So we are requesting that C variance, which would bring us 3.92 feet over the allowable height of 40 feet. And you have a separate item in your ordinance for building stories. Three are required, we are requesting four, which I would make the argument can comfortably fit within a building that is approximately 40 feet, slightly taller than a we're okay in terms of lot coverage and building coverage. We are requesting relief for impervious building coverage. We are nearly 100% pervious. The existing condition is at almost 90% pervious, so we are increasing that, but not by much. And I think we're the use that we're bringing to the site can be used to kind of consider that variance. The floor area ratio is 2.0. We are proposing 2.17. So again, an FAR that's slightly higher in terms of our mass build out, and that speaks to our unit density and specifically the affordable units that we actually spoke about here. And then we have a deviation for the minimum common open space required 30%. We're at about 20%. I will call your attention to, again, in red you see here, I know I spoke about this before, max two bedrooms per dwelling unit. We do not comply because we do have two three-bedroom units. Those two three-bedroom units are affordable units as required by code. Moving forward, I wanted to talk a little bit about the parking and driveway, and then we'll get into the drawings. So, As I suggested before, we do have a series of 48 parking spaces, parking stalls that are striped, that are shown, and I'll show you all of those. By calculation, which you can see on the lower left, 64.35, which we round down to 64 are required. With an EV parking credit, we increased by 7 spaces, so we're at 55. So we're still shy. 64 to 55, and then we have consultants that can speak to that. And then we are not proposing loading spaces here, just because of the size of the retail. I don't think that's necessary. So, in our proposed, this is the sort of architectural site plan, I'll draw your attention to a couple of things that we highlighted here. First is the relationship of the trash room to the dumpster. The dumpster is located on Garfield, and there is a clear relation between that trash room, which will make sure that all trash is inside the building, except and brought out to the dumpster for collection. So there's not going to be trash on the street or anything like that. We have a trash can plan in place here. You'll also notice in cyan that retail space that I talked about, which is about 1270 square feet. And then we have four triangles that you see on here. The one filled in red triangle is for vehicular ingress and egress, and that's off of Garfield, as I spoke about before. And then the non-filled triangles are for pedestrian ingress and egress. And so at the corner, we have an entry for the retail space. Down First Avenue, we have the primary pedestrian entrance to the lobby. And then in the rear from the parking, we have a secondary entrance to the lobby from the parking area. Continuing on, the trash removal plan I talked about already. We do have, oh, I want to go back actually. So I forgot to mention the 25-foot radius, which is a dedication that is currently under discussion with the county. But you can see here clearly that as opposed to radiusing it, we've just decided to do an angle, right? So it's an angled cut where we've removed volume of the building to make way for the sightline, which is another way of doing it. It doesn't have to be a radius to actually make sure that that view is expanded to what it needs to be. And so you can see here also the Ashford site triangle, which I think my colleague Patrick will speak to as well. Talked about the trash plan already, so you see that again here. And then briefly, the lighting plan. We have pictured here the lights that are specified. So in yellow at the corner, we have a recessed down light. So that's not going to cast light up, it's merely down. Along with the magenta is a wall sconce that is projecting also down. And you see we have a lot of those around the building to make sure that there's plenty of light. And then interior to the building, open air, but interior under the floors, we have a series of parking garage lights, which are these larger LED lights that propose a lot of light going down. Now, the first floor plan you see here, I talked a lot about this in the site plan already, but you see we have pretty much parking. And so I mentioned that there are five tandem spaces, which you see on the upper, you see my mouse here. You see on the upper portion of the page, coated in green are the, in orange, are the kind of the stairs and elevator, and then in cyan, the cyan is that retail space. And then we've outlined in red our five EV spaces that we've designated that are just off of the enclosed portion of the building where we can propose a plenty of power. Now, as we get into the unit plans, you see here we're designating in green here the affordable units. And so you can see if I read from top to bottom, left to right, we have two bedrooms which will be designated affordable. We have two bedroom unit 204, which is market. Two bedroom 203 affordable, and then a two bedroom on the corner, which is unit 202. Unit 201 is a larger two bedroom on fronting Garfield. We have a three bedroom behind that, now going back up on the back end of the plan, which is a nice big 1,350 square foot unit, three bedroom designated. And then we have a series of 2 1 bedrooms and then a two bedroom. So this floor plan basically carries. And when we set that on our fourth floor, I'll show you how it changes a little bit. Now, the other thing that I want to draw attention to here is already we're beginning to sculpt the front of this building. So you can see on the lower left that angled cut that we made based on the conversation we had with this board last year, making sure we're maintaining site access to the right of way. And that opens up, and you can see the sight line, which goes straight. So that opens up a fair amount of vision to the building. And that creates what we think is an interesting feature. You know, we'll paint it and we'll try and use it architecturally. The other thing I want to draw the board's attention to is how there's a series of in and out kind of sculpting of the front of the building. What that's doing, and you'll see this in elevation, is it's breaking down the scale of the building. So when you see the building vertically, you're seeing it in a series of vertical sections. So it doesn't seem like one long thing. it's modulated, and you can read that in the plan as well as the elevation, and that's a very important contextual kind of part of this proposal. The third floor, as I said, stacks with the second floor, and you see here that we have one two-bedroom unit, 303, and then one three-bedroom unit, 310, that are affordable here. You see the setbacks listed in the rear on this drawing also. So at Garfield, we're at 35 feet from the rear setback, and then up on the interior of the site, we're 44.6 inches because of the shape of the site. Now, what happens on the proposed fourth floor plan is we step the building back, right? And so that also speaks to our response to FAR, but also the height requirement. So when you see in the elevation that we're maintaining a street wall that is lower than the 40 feet that's required, and then we set back that fourth floor by 9 feet, you can see the 9 foot dimension. That not only allows for roof decks, which we like, for these front units, but it also allows to break down the scale of the building. I already talked about breaking down the scale of the building vertically. This is breaking down the scale of the building in terms of its horizontal street frontage and therefore its height. So that's important. Now this wall, because it's set in at 9 feet, is a straight wall. And I'll show you what that looks like on the elevation momentarily. This is our roof plan. This is an occupiable roof. So we have almost a 39, just could not get to 3900, 3899 square foot roof deck that is fully accessible. So we do have an elevator and two stairwells proposed going up to that roof deck. And what you see in purple is what we're proposing as, at this point, a screened mechanical area. And screened mechanical area, there'll be condensing units, things like that, that are out there that we need to think about for the roof. Now, we're not totally ready to propose them yet because we haven't gotten into mechanical design for this building. But we have a hunch that that will be approximately enough space, and we think that that location behind the roof deck makes sense. So that's, I think that that's an added thing. I don't think that that was actually talked about in our plan, but I thought it was pretty important. Now the building elevation is here. So this is the First Avenue elevation, and you can see already that we are modulating this vertically. I do have a material board also. Got it. So we have a series of materials that we have. I'm just like putting my kid in my lap.
Mike, should we go ahead and have this marked?
That's not part of this exhibit, yes.
Yes, as A13.
So we have a series, and I'm happy to pass this around, but a series of materials. I'll just read them off, and then if the board wants to see this, I can pass it around. But we have a modern gray smooth brick, which largely exists on the base of our building. So we're holding the base of the building with a heavy sort of historic material, masonry material. We have a kind of a wood-ish, wood-type plank, which is framing that corner, which you can see on the right of this drawing. And then we have a series of different cementitious fiber panels. I know there's party panel, and you have a bunch of these. We're proposing party panel here. And we have these in a gray and in a white that exist in the building. And I'll show you where those exist. And then we have a metal panel, which is a decorative panel and also used for some window frames, right? So we're really kind of thinking about this material palette. And when you, one of the things I ask the board to do is when you blur your eyes, you'll see that this pops, right? This is you kind of blur your eyes and look at the kind of color composite here, that the kind of wood-ish color pops. And that's the idea. We want that at the corner. For a variety of reasons. We think because we're cutting that corner, that's a moment for architectural feature, which we like, but also that change in color will also alert motorists, pedestrians, dogs, anyone walking past this building because it is a change, because it's a contrasting color, and so that's important. So if anyone wants to see this, I'll just and we can pass that around. So in terms of the elevation itself, I talked about if we start from right and go to the left. So in the right is that sort of wood-ish frame with glass at the corner, and that's cut away, and you can actually see the angle by looking at the portion that's almost rendered black all the way right. That's the same material, it's just cut at an angle and going back. And then you see that we have the cementitious hardy board that is set up in a kind of vertical arrangement of window to window wall to window to window wall, modulated to break down the scale of this building. The height of the building at the third story, or basically the top of the fourth floor, is 32 feet 7 inches. So 32 feet 7 inches, as I said, is under that 40 feet, and that's where we propose to set the building back, right? So we are proposing a roof deck height of that 43 feet 11 inches, 43.92 feet. But remember that the main street wall of this building is at 32 feet 11 inches. And then we have the latest material in that board that's being passed around, the white cementitious fiber board that is on the board. Now, instead of going right to the rest of the elevations, I thought I would show a block elevation because we've been into the design standards, and I'm not gonna go through the design standards. I think that's the questions about the design standards should they come up. But one of the things that I'd like everyone to kind of notice here is, first of all, we are nearly at scale with the building built next door. Now we are somewhere around 4 feet taller, four and a half feet, four and change feet taller, and we'll know that for sure when that building is fully topped out. We think that that building is about 39 feet, 6.5 inches currently. So we are, less than 5 feet taller than it with our requested deviation. Now, we do have larger floor to ceilings here. We do think that from a daylighting point of view, from a living point of view, a higher floor to ceiling is something that we want to look at here, right? So that is something else that is giving us this kind of height. When you blur your eyes and look at this image, you do see that the main portion, and this graphic is a little darker than what I just showed you before, so it is darker in the print. We are maintaining that three-story street wall and then setting back. And I just want to also point out here that we do have a series of flat roof buildings all around us, right? The building next door to us, to the left, is a flat roof building. The brewery down the street, which I have an image of, is a flat roof building. The Brutalist, and I mean that in a respectable kind of way, Little Verizon structure, is a flat roof building, right? So this portion of your First Avenue, if we want to be contextual, we should be proposing a flat roof building, and we felt strongly about that. The 7-Eleven, I actually just went in there before I came here. That's actually a flat roof building. It just has a faux little pitch in the front of it, actually. Not that that's anything special there. So this is the Garfield Avenue side. And so this is where you see that kind of wood-ish feature that we talked about. And this is on the angle that I showed you in the site plan. And then the materials carry here. This is that Garfield Avenue elevation. And you can see here that the CBD terminates right behind our site, and that's where the residential zone begins. But again, we are in the CBD here. And as you see across First Avenue, it returns to that flat roof, kind of structure. Other examples of flat roof structure, I talked about the brewery, I talked about the Verizon building. Our rear elevation is simply the cementitious fiber board, and you can see that here. Less articulation on this, just windows. We were asked to consider the relationship of the sidewalk, curb, and street when we were asked before the board, and we made a series of sections that were included in our drawings submitted. This is one of them here. It basically shows the relationship of a human being to that the inset planter that we have, which is about 5 feet 2 inches wide. And then we still have a width of sidewalk that you see the curb is here, a 6-inch curb, or I'm circling here. So there is still plenty of width on this sidewalk, and we think it's quite a walkable sidewalk with planters set all across our building. So there will be green planting all across the building as well. These are just exterior elevations that were enlarged as a requirement of this submission. And that's on the metric view of the building. And I think it's important that the board sees this because you really do see that angle at Garfield, that opening up that we have of Garfield. And I'll end with the image that got a response to the board. So thank you. That is my presentation.
Questions from the board?
I see for the rooftop mechanical, there's some screening. Are you taking into consideration the sound?
Not specified here, but when we specify that.
Are you proposing to remove any of the existing trees around the site?
What is we're going to begin again?
Apologize for the delay. Looks like we are back online.
Quick, quiet, please.
Mm-hmm.
you think they're on that date?
May I just be clear, that means we're not recording?
It's really, yeah, I don't know what it's concert or on person, but, so try to speak louder.
If we speak into the mic like this, can you, okay.
Is that working as well? On air over here?
Yes, sir.
Great.
Thank you.
Yes, okay. Continuing with the...
Did you have anything?
I don't have confidence. So try to speak out of me.
Doug, did you have anything?
Thank you. I'd like to start with confirmation of the building height. I believe your testimony was the building height is approximately 43 feet, where 40 is the max allowed?
Correct. It's 43.92 is what we noticed for. 40 is allowed. And I spoke to...
Recording in progress.
So, 40 feet is permitted. We are requesting 43.92. And the way that we got to 43.92 is we thought a little bit more floor to ceiling height would not be a bad thing in this building. So we are seeking a C variance, which the board knows is either 10% of whatever is less. In this case, would be 10% of the allowable height or 30 feet. So that gets us to 44 if we are just under 44.
And that's to the floor of the rooftop deck, correct? Can you explain to the board and the public everything vertically above the floor that's being proposed?
Sure. So what you see here are just the stair and elevator bulkheads. So the stair and elevator bulkheads, obviously the stair bulkhead is an enclosure to allow, covers the stair to allow for going up to the roof. And then the elevator bulkhead is and these electric traction elevators these days, they're machine room-less elevators, so there's no separate room now in buildings. And all of the equipment that runs the elevator is actually in what they refer to as a penthouse above the elevator. And so that's what you're seeing on behind it, the tallest thing that you see is actually, in fact, the mechanical room of the elevator. And the lower two things you see are the stair bulkheads. And those do not count for height in the ordinance height.
So let's just confirm that. So what is your overall height of the stair tower?
The stair bulkhead is at 53 feet 5 inches.
53.
There's two locations on the road. There's two locations that you can see on the elevation, and I'll show you in the plan. So it's in this area in orange I'm circling, and then this area in orange I'm circling here.
Okay. So I recognize Chapter 15057 has an exception for stair towers and an exception for elevator towers, amongst other appurtenances on roofs in the CBD zone. I'm reading it as elevator, we'll start with the stair first. You said 53 feet, correct? And that's height above the average elevation at the ground level, correct? So
yes.
You're saying zero, it's relative height. So 0 feet at the sidewalk, 53 feet at the top, 40 is permitted. So you're exceeding the max allowable by 13 feet. Is that correct?
At the stair bulkhead.
Yes. Right. So I'm reading the code allows stair towers in particular to exceed the height limitation to a maximum of 10 feet.
Right.
So you're exceeding by 13 feet, therefore not being eligible for that exception.
Right, so right, we're asking for a C variance for height, and that's where that extra feet comes from, right? So if we're at 40 feet, 10 feet would be 50 feet. Now, because we're asking for 43 feet, 10 feet is my understanding.
Okay, that's not my interpretation of the code. And again, elevator towers makes... They could be excluded from the overall height calculation if they meet the criteria of not exceeding 15 feet. So the code doesn't allow 40 plus 15 plus 10%. The max building height is 40. So as I wrote it up in our technical review number two, that without meeting the exception, that's going to grossly exceed the 10% overage on height, pushing it into the D variance category.
So I would say that, and I understand what you're saying. The stair bulkheads can be, I want them to be as low as possible. We're not suggesting here that we want these sort of big things on top of our building. The stair bulkheads, as you know, are while there might be something in the land development ordinance about this, they are actually regulated at the end of the day by building code, by international building code, which allows for head height clearances in closed spaces that do include stair bulkheads as enclosed spaces, right?
I agree with that, but the issue here is your starting point, right? You're not starting at 40 feet and having a 10-foot stair tower. You're starting at 43 and having a 10-foot stair tower, putting you at 53. What you're saying, it's a function of having four full stories within a zone.
I'd like to take a look at that, the section of that stair, and I'm happy to tell you how low I think we can make it.
I want to be very clear. I'm not concerned with how high is the stair tower protruding above the floor? It's 10 feet?
Approximately.
Right. So I want to be very clear. My issue is not with the stair tower. It's the starting point of it already exceeding the max building height in the zone is putting into a D variance condition. Same thing, and I believe that occurs how many times? Twice?
So I'll take a look at that. But I can tell you, like, you know, there's, we regularly in municipalities request these variances, and so if what you're saying is true, then there would be no need for a board to grant a C variance on any multifamily building that actually has a stair that breaches this claim that you're talking about. So I can't, I intellectually, I'm not sure I can get behind it. I mean, we'll take a look at it for sure.
That's good. Let's go through the same exercise with the elevator tower as well. So code allows for an exception of 15 feet above the max permitted height in the zone. 40 feet is the max permitted. What's the proposed overall height?
It's from 7-11, so it's at 3 feet again. Same thing.
Well, it's at 18 feet above the max permitted 40.
15 plus 3,
correct. Correct. Okay. So again, just for the board's clarification, the way we've handled it here, and it's my interpretation that the max height applies to the overall, it applies to all structures as proposed, as they don't meet the exception criteria.
I have a question. As far as the heating air units, they're individual units. The condensing units, are they going to be exposed on the outside of the building, on the facade, or is everything going to be on the roof?
No, they will not be. Will not be compacted. So they'll be air handlers, not designed yet, but some kind of air handler inside the building. But the condensing units only on the roof. And that will be behind.
Okay, let's go through some of the items in my last report that are relevant to architecture. Can you confirm one more time that I have the correct bedroom distribution count? You're proposing 11 one-bedroom units, 17 two-bedroom units, and 2 three-bedroom units. Is that correct? Okay. And of the one-bedroom units, can you confirm how many do not comply with the code in regards to minimum square footage requirement per our chapter 150?
Per the land development ordinance, we have 7 that are under, we have 9 that are under the 750, and those are, I'm happy to read those to you if you'd like, 206, which is 703, 208, which is 704, 209, which is 704, 211, which is 741, 306, which is 703, 308, which is 704, 309, which is 704, 311, which is 741, and 403, which is 739.
Okay. Can you provide an opinion or any justification as to why the minimum standards of the code are not being met?
Yeah, I think that we're not turning this into a kind of broader discussion. I mean, I think that these kinds of buildings actually allow for a fair amount of housing diversity, and they bring a type of unit mix that isn't achievable in the housing stock that is broadly available in municipalities. And so therefore, a modest amount of units that are under that base ordinance that still meet all the daylighting and spatial requirements of building code, I think make a little bit more sense. There's smaller units, so in theory, there's a lot of pressure, so it will be a little bit lower. But I think that's probably not a bad thing.
Okay.
So we just want to go with scrap the building codes and then go with neighborhood density and back the neighborhoods.
I didn't say that. Yeah. No, I didn't say that. I didn't say that. And in no way, I can tell you that I've been a professional for a very long time, and we take the building codes extremely seriously.
Well, maybe you could take a moment, because there are a lot of waivers and variances that are requested here. Maybe you could take a moment just to explain or demonstrate the efforts that you went through to meet the borough's ordinances and zoning laws.
Yeah,
Sure. So, well, so the, I think that if you look at the plan layout, which, again, does not deny building code at all, what we see here are a series of primarily one and two bedroom units that are laid out very consistently with contemporary design standards for these types of units in these types of buildings, right? And so, for instance, the two bedrooms, in just about all the cases, I think, the bedrooms are actually split on either side of the living room for privacy. There's ample natural light that comes into these buildings, these units. There's no bedrooms that are pushed to the back of the unit or something like that. In other words, we're not squeezing things in here and squeezing down. We're really thinking about code and standards and quality of living. And sure, I mean, again, there's a difference of 46 square feet between your ordinance and our lowest unit here. Can we do something about that? I'm sure we can take a look at that. But this is a kind of deviation that I think can be considered based on the quality, the spatial quality of the units.
May I ask a question about another deviation? You mentioned the reduced number of parking spots, but I did see that over half of them are for compact cars. Could you explain to me the ideology behind that?
Yeah, so we have a traffic person who will be able to speak to that. But again, you see that the, I don't recall off the top of my head what the permitted amount of compact spaces are, but we do know, again, anecdotally, I know that while some people like driving large cars, there's a lot more smaller cars on the roads. And what we find is in these kinds of projects, the compact spaces do satisfy the requirement. The size of these spaces, by the way, I just want to zoom in here and show you, is basically 8 by 18. So it's only the width that is the compact space dimension, it's not the depth. The depth is a standard space. We're still calling it compact because of the width, but they do meet the depth requirement of the standard space.
And that's one foot width difference from the standard space.
Correct. So the standard space is
8 versus 9.
Yeah, the standard space is 9 by 18, and the compact spaces are usually defined as 8 by 16. What we're proposing is a compact space of 8 by 18, so one less in width.
So it's basically 6 inches on each side.
Correct.
So on that same topic, I don't know if they're going to address it on the parking traffic, but with regard to that, you know, is there going to be any type of, leasing requirement that this particular unit only can have a compact? Because we all know what's going to happen. Somebody's going to sign the agreement to lease. Someone's going to come in, they're going to have a larger car, they might be parking out on the street now. So how is that going to be handled?
Yeah, we'll have the traffic agent.
Back to the one-bedroom apartments. So 9 out of the 11 are not up to code from 703 square feet, and they should be 750, you know?
The next deviation from our code with regards to architecture that I want to talk about is the floor area ratio. So the permitted floor area ratio in CBD district is a very generous 2.0 to begin with. That's the ratio of the usable floor areas relative to the overall size of the lot. So our code allows for a ratio of 2.0. So 2 times the area of the lot can be utilized for floor area. So you have your multiple floors stacked within that building footprint, resulting in an overage on what's permitted of 2.0 is permitted, and 2.17 is what's proposed with this application.
And so just to do very quick math, and we acknowledge that we're seeking that, that 1.17 is, is about 3,000 additional people. Yeah, so I think that I guess one could say economic justification for doing a project like this, and I, the owner can certainly speak to that as well. But I think that there was kind of the account that we were looking for here. And I do think again that if you while we are over in the ordinance, this is a corner lot. So corner lots traditionally on downtown main streets can't handle more density. They can't handle more coverage. We're asking for coverage because of the impervious coverage. So we thought that this was appropriate.
So approximately 3,000 square feet beyond what the code permits. Now that includes the
three units.
I'd like to talk a little bit about the proposed structure relative to the right-of-way lines. So can you bring up your exhibit that shows like the front elevation, for example?
So you see Garfield, and you see that we are angling the building. And that was measured. I mean, we were off site looking at that in terms of exposure and not blocking that corner.
Okay. So this exhibit doesn't show the relationship of the building relative to the right-of-way lines, is it accurate to say that you're proposing encroachments with the building itself above grade into both the county right-of-way on First Ave and into East Garfield?
I'm going to let Patrick answer that, if that's okay, because he's actually been working on that. I will say that the building at the ground floor is set in, and the building that projects out to closer to the lot line up above. So, and again, I'll let the city engineer speak to this, but I'm quite sure that the building on the ground floor is within the required envelope.
So a pedestrian walking along First Ave might be within the right-of-way and then have building over top of them?
Our building doesn't go outside of our lot line. And that's something that I want you to see that clearly here. So the dashed line, this is the second floor plan, is our property line. So the property line is here, and so what we do is we pull in, we push out to that lot line and so forth, so that's where that meter pattern comes in, and then you can see the triangle that we've taken where we've cut the building back, and this is the extreme case of projection, because if I go to the floor below, you can see that it's actually cut in even more from that, so if I switch back and forth, right?
Excellent. So with regards to the building foundation itself, I assume you hadn't designed the foundation at this point, but do you...
Can't labor.
So the foundation will need to go into the county right away?
No.
No.
The building will cantilever from its most internal point to hold the building out. So what you see here is basically the foundation line. And the footings, any footing that comes anywhere near a lot line will be an asymmetrical footing. So you know the footing, you know, the footing is like this, the footing will actually just be an L, so it will all be in the lot line.
Excellent. So no proposed structural... Okay.
Sometimes contractors.
You're not presenting an application to this board. While this board doesn't have the jurisdiction to give you right to build within the county right away or municipal right away, I just want to understand what's being presented to the board. No work in the right away with regards to the building or foundation. Okay, so this is the ground floor plan. Can you flip up the second floor plan with the balconies? I do have a concern. Can you talk, are those balconies, are they usable balconies? Can people walk out onto them, or are they decorative, or?
I mean, they're occupied. You know, you're not going to fit 20 people on this balcony. You need a modest chair just to give you a little bit of outdoor space.
Okay.
In your yard.
Okay.
And then also,
I have a concern with one of the utility poles' location that's very close to one of the balconies that's about mid-block, midway through your project. So you have an existing utility pole with three-phase power, three transformers. When I scale it off your site plan, you're like less than. Appears to be less than 8 feet.
Okay, so I'm not aware of that. I'm not aware of that amendment in the center of the survey. So, so obviously there's again code issues that govern how close we can be to these things.
Yeah.
And if it's the case that we're too close, we're gonna have to redo that.
You know, maybe you can go to that 3D rendering that was prepared, a nighttime rendering. Right. So you're not depicting all the utility poles, overhead wires, transformers in this photo. Okay. And just for.
But you're talking about in the front of the building or the rear of the building?
Along First Avenue.
Right.
Along First Avenue.
Right.
So let me just go back and show you the just go into the
plan. Yeah. Go back.
Anyway, my comment. Standards, but so we have a balcony located here where I'm circling on this unit right there. We have a balcony up here where I'm circling right there. And I think those are the only two balconies that are on the front of the building. So we have balconies up. I thought you were talking about four of these.
Slide two, though, that would depict the.
Yeah, the that is. Yeah. Oh, right. Right. So we'll have to check.
Yeah, stop right there for a second. So you could see the actual utility pole run in this photo, the borough street furniture, a large mature sycamore London plane on East Garfield, and the utility pole that I'm talking about with three transformers, three-phase power overhead. Let's see if it's on your survey, if it's on your site plan. Yeah, maybe we could have the engineer, when he comes up, talk about the proximity, but it's the symbol on your base mapping and survey depicts it as a simple circle, but it's got much more horizontal footprint than depicted, so that's a big concern of mine with regards to proximity to that accessible balcony. Can you talk a little bit about how it's a flat roof? How is the drainage going to be collected on the building itself and conveyed to the stormwater system that was designed as part of your site plan?
So there will be roof drains on the roof. I don't think there are spies here, but typically with buildings like this, there won't be like exterior gutters. There'll be gutters that are coordinated to come in through the building and then out to the drainage. So we're not going to adorn this with gutters that are going to get clogged with leaves or anything like that. It'll all be handled, but there'll be, as it's a flat roof, we'll have just a series of pitches on that roof that, cricket into drainage points. We'll have drainage with, we'll probably have some overflow scuppers in the back, but there'll be drainage points and the water will be taken down in and, as it is, the stormwater drainage.
requirements.
Okay. And the gutters will be, correct me if I'm wrong, they'll be brought to the parking lot area in the rear of the building, right? They're not going to be daylighted onto the sidewalk along First or East Park.
We don't insist on that. We don't want that. We want, you know, the part of the strategy is that the building is on the street there. And we're going to be investing in the street, certainly not in that region.
Honestly, a good slide. So the subject property along the eastern side, it has a zone boundary, right? You have a residential zoning district immediately to the east of the property. Can you talk about how I recognize there's noise being generated within the CBD zone along First Avenue, but when you are, your feet are at 43 feet above the sidewalk and you have a residential zone, 35 feet adjacent to you, how are you going to stop the noise projection towards a residential neighborhood?
So part of that will be, if you remember from this roof, and thank you for bringing this up, we talked already about the mechanical screening. So part of the strategy of putting the mechanical screening, which is noise attenuator, behind the deck, is it will also actually block and reflect any noise generated on that deck. And it's blocking, basically, going right to that residential district. So that would be the strategy that we have. There will be, you know, the appearances that you drew that we were talking about before will also be good for bouncing sound and that kind of thing, just because they are smaller things on the roof. So I do think that there won't be a lot of sound projection going straight on the building.
With regards to the building itself, can you discuss a little bit about how your design deals with guiding pedestrian flow and circulation through the site? Specifically, where are the residents going to be entering the building? How are they going to leave the site to walk the community? Special attention to the driveway on East Garfield.
Yeah, so this is the site drawing that I put up before, and what we've done is we've in effect separated the vehicular display, which is further back in Garfield, outside of the building body, right? And that curb cut is in, I said it's approximately the same place, actually, I think it's people putting it further back toward the back of the site. All the pedestrian queuing, with the exception of a modest door that is internal to the building to access from the parking area, is actually on the front of the building, right? So we have our main lobby entrance central to the building, which is right here, and then we have that retail entry right at the corner, which makes a lot of sense for a kind of neighborhood commercial organization, right? You want the pedestrian queuing into the retail concern right at the corner, and you can push the residential concern down the block a little bit. The other thing that we are doing here is we are tree lining the entire, you know, planted trees and planters. I have a section to show you that. That actually, I think, helps guide the pedestrian along First Avenue, and obviously with the center spot for the commercial. Those are the ingress and egress points into the building. So I think that materially is actually going to be quite good.
Pedestrians exiting the rear parking lot onto East Garfield. Do you have an elevation view from the Garfield side?
Yeah. So we don't want people walking out the driveway. That's not fair. The point is that the driveway is real. Now, we can't always manage that, but that the intent here is that, you know, the building has a face. We want people entering on pedestrian and pedestrians to enter into the building from First Avenue. We're not putting the gate up or anything like that. I don't think that that's warranted here. So can someone walk into the rear yard? Sure. But I think most people that have any business going in and out of the building will follow the logic of entering on the pedestrian side. Or if you're parking as a resident, you go up, you'll enter through
Your
access to the
car. Because the concern that I have is you park, you get home, you park your car, you want to walk to a local business, you come out this very limited driveway area depicted in the bottom right of your, of this exhibit. You're, as a pedestrian, you're pinned in a bare minimum width driveway opening up against that trash room, right? Is there, have you looked into ways to minimize that size, provide some sort of a sidewalk or any type of spot for a pedestrian?
You're suggesting, so there's a sidewalk, the municipal sidewalk cuts in here, right? So it flares at the corner.
Right. Right.
And then it cuts in, and then we have our apron for the driveway. So there's still, so there is still a sidewalk here. Now, we've done things in the past where, and I'm sure we can talk with ownership about this, like if there's some kind of lighting or sensor to actually move way. But we, you know, these are not uncommon situations that you're talking about. I mean, people, you know, do raise these signs. And again, our position is people should walk through the front, cars should go into the back. But I think if you're worried about that, I'm sure we can, you know, with either a sensor light or something like that, you know, once it's going to get crossed, it might not, but then that will alert certainly any pedestrians on the sidewalk and leaving the lot and cars in the street.
That was a totally different point I was going to reserve for your engineer, right? So we might as well talk about that now. Pedestrians not associated with your building, walking on East Garfield. You have a depicted in pink at the lower, cyan at the bottom of this exhibit. Your trash room, right? That's still the trash room, right?
Right.
Okay. You have a 24-foot wide aisle?
That's the drive aisle.
Right, so your sidewalk is it's so close to the corner of the building there,
yep,
that a vehicle exiting this, you're egressing your site, that the hood has to be out on the sidewalk before the driver can actually see these pedestrians on the street.
Well, so we pulled the angle in the trash room,
right,
was I think what was dictated to us in terms of getting that trash smaller, that will the sight line more. But again, the way that we've handled this in, you know, far more dense places is that, you know, once the car rolls past, you know, approximately the third, second or third EV space in, there's a sensor. The sensor turns on a light and or makes a sound, and we can alert pedestrians that way. I also think, and I won't wait for the traffic testimony, but I also don't think the volume of cars going into and out of this. I mean, I know that I understand that there's a lot of people here that feel like this is a big project for the municipality, and I can appreciate that. But I don't think the volume of cars entering and leaving this place is not going to be a constant flow of traffic.
And that's a good point you mentioned.
I just ask a quick question then. The parking lot is for residents only. It's not for parking for the retail. So where do people that will be visiting the retail space park?
Right, so we are not providing in the calculation, we are not providing what would probably be one parking space required for that commercial space in the subsequent parking lot on the street.
So you'll have somebody.
Yeah, is that we want to add spaces on the street?
Okay, very well.
Yeah, there'll be some creation of street parking, but yeah, we'll have Pat speak with that.
All right.
The engineer.
Yeah, I got one question. While we were talking about the trash room and the dumpster, you had that depicted as a trash room off of First Avenue, but then you had a dumpster area in the rear southeast corner by Garfield. How does the trash get from the trash room to the dumpster area?
Right, so I put this slide up before this is I spoke to this before, so, and actually I went through this with this. So the trash room is a dedicated location off the lot, and it's also off the retail space. So it actually exists dedicated with recycling carts and all that kind of stuff in that space that was, right, road improved, et cetera, right? When those carts need to be emptied, they will be taken out of that space following the dashed line that we have, so through the rear lobby entry out to the dumpster and discarded in the dumpster. All of that occurs within our property, so no crossing over right away to do that or anything like that. Trash stays secure in the dumpster, which is a either password protected, key fob, whatever space, and then it's basically accessed by the removal company that comes and collects the trash, and that would be scheduled by you.
Yeah, there's going to be a removal.
And are you going to have trash, recycling, cardboard, glass, plastic, all in that, all separate? And is that dumpster area adequate for that?
I believe it is. And we're big believers in recycling. I was going to joke about that. Yes, I mean, we will coordinate all of that stuff, but I do believe in consulting with the team and the engineers and also the owners who operate these buildings that we do have in this
space. Now, I'll make a recommendation and any approvals for this project include private trash haulers. We have other buildings in town where the municipal employees have difficulty getting those dumpsters across the sidewalk down into the street with rear loaders.
Right, that's a good point. So
they had to actually go Home Depot and buy planks to put them at the curb line, at the curb cut, so they can get the dumpsters up and down.
That's a fair point. Okay, so again, as I was just speaking with the gentleman from CME, we do have a curb flare, right? So that curb cuts back in and extends the asphalt of the street approximately at that location. So at that location, based on the sidewalk perimeter condition, I think is beneficial for collection. I don't know if you'll just probably speak to how they deal with trash, but we've had conversations.
We'll deal with
that later. Okay, for sure.
I have some more follow-up questions and just respond from one of the slides, and I think I'm just confusing myself, so it's mostly for my education, but on the slide it shows the four EV stations. Were there 10 proposed, or is that where the...
Yes, so the reason why, I alluded to this when on my proposed key points. So the way that the EV spaces are required, so ultimately we have 7 that are required, and 4 of them are required to be installed at the time of change from a certificate of occupancy, right? And then following that, there's a phase-in schedule, or something like that. It's not long, but following the construction completion, the final 3 dedicated EV spaces need to be managed by law, and need to be installed. Also, we'll probably just do it all at the same time. But I leave this in here because this is what the code requires.
So they technically have to be made ready, right? But they can go ahead and install right ahead of time.
So would they take the place of one of the existing, or is there so one
right,
of
so
like the
they are counted in the so there's an EV
in the 48.
So the 48. Do you remember what I suggested it's on this slide? So we have 48 parking spots, but with the EV credit, which is a state mandate,
right.
That increases our parking capacity as we're.
Yeah. I'm just curious where they're going to go.
Yeah.
Maybe show me on that.
Yeah. So the first 4 phased in.
Correct, I saw those, yeah.
Are over here. The other 3, while they're not shown, they're probably going to go somewhere in the you can see my mouse, this location. They're going to go somewhere where we have, yeah, over here, somewhere
okay,
where,
so,
somewhere close
we'll
to
take one
where
of those
there's
volume on the
there. Yeah.
So I have a question regarding your, I don't know if you're going to cover this on your traffic as well, but with regard to the retail stores, how do you anticipate the retailers being able to get goods into their business? Is there a designated area that you have for loading and unloading of trucks? Are they going to be occupying the parking area? walking.
So, I mean, that's a good question, too. So, this is not a large retail center, right? So, this isn't like Walgreens or something like that, right? It's a 1,200 square foot space. So, we don't, I don't think we have a tenant yet. Maybe the owners can speak to that. But normally, for a space this small, it can just be after hours loading, just in through the doors provided. Right now, we're selling two doors. Yeah, we can certainly increase the number of doors if need be. But, you know, the way that this is handled is we typically will just, with hand trucks, bring stock in to
Yeah, that's understandable. But where the trucks are parked, where they're going to be blocking the flow of traffic, pedestrians,
That's also a good point. So the truck will absolutely park at Garfield. We'll tell you that. And how that works out operationally, I think that's a lot of
Mr. Chairman, that's all I have at this point. Thank you.
Thank you, Doug. Anybody else have a question from up here? Okay, at this time, we're going to open up questions to the public. And we're going to ask that the questions that you ask be phrased as a question and pertain to what the gentleman has presented already. Sir.
There's a residential zone behind there. And I want to point out that when you did the 158 building, how do you plan, in terms of bringing a question to the table, when you did 158, you had to use the mason truck for delivery of material. And you also used that lot for storage of material. This building is as big or bigger. How are you going to do all of that on that corner lot?
That's a sort of construction means question, but I think that...
Are you saying it's not relevant?
No, I'm not saying it's not relevant.
Okay.
What I'm saying is that that's not something that we're sort of talking about at this board.
Right.
Probably during construction, but I will say...
During construction... So, do you have an agreement? I want to know if you're going to do the same thing that we did in 158.
Mr. Urso, just if I could interject for a moment. This is the architect. There will be several other presentations, and that we will get to that for sure. But bear in mind that the architect is talking about the architecture. When we get to the traffic and the building and the engineer, that might be a more appropriate time to deal with that question.
I don't think it's more appropriate because it bears on what the architect's allowed to do. If you redetermine that you can't adequately, don't have the space to build a building of the size that you're talking about with the variances that you're talking about, then that is appropriate for this meeting right now.
We'll have the engineer address the answer to that question.
When will that be?
Next witness.
Before you sit down, Mr. Urso.
Mr. Urso, why don't you come back up for a second? Because this, come back up. Because this, the administrator received your correspondence. He looked at it. I've looked at it. I know that you had discussions with the prior administrator on this prior project. As to whether or not it was appropriate to have a staging area at an adjacent property. I reviewed this ordinance, and unless they come here and get approval from this board, they don't. The bottom line is...
Well, how did it happen before?
I wasn't involved before. I'm telling you what's happened now. They got a letter. New administrator received your letter, sent it to me, reviewed the ordinance, and the ordinance says that the storage of construction equipment and materials is a permitted use in this town in, only in the LI zone in connection with a construction business. This isn't in the LI zone. If you're not in the LI zone and you're not in a construction business, you have to get approvals in order to do that kind of function on your property.
So if they wanted to do this at 160, they would have to get explicit approval from the board to do what they did at 158.
That's the way I read the ordinance. And if they violate that, then they're subject to enforcement, they're subject to injunctive relief, they're subject to fines and penalties.
And can the applicant discuss why that wasn't handled that way? The applicant's...
In another application, Chris?
No, I'm asking, why was it not done the last time? If you're aware of the...
Well, the last time is not before the board now. That order is demonstrated. We can deal with
it's
that.
It's the same builder.
Right, same builder.
And the same people know these rules or not know these rules?
But when they deal with the...
So we're talking about a question for our architect.
Okay, I'll come back.
Any other questions?
Any good night there, anyway.
Could you come forward, please?
Oh, that's okay.
And, you know, there's a microphone right here.
Can't talk, man. I'm living in this town for 25 years. And then 16 years I worked for my daily employee. I love this town. Beautiful town on 25. Beautiful town for people. Beautiful people here, right? I know everybody sit down over there. Everybody coming up every day for roll egg and cheese. Everybody have some. And a coffee and ice. School closing after the old kids coming up to my daily. They are so happy. If you're not down to this store, I tell you something, you never eat the popular leg and cheese. You never eat the half stuff.
It's never. I'm sorry to interrupt. Do you have a question for the architect?
I'm not questioning, just I'm talking about this.
There will be time for a comment.
Thank you very much. Thank you very much.
Thank you.
Thank you, Mr. McGolden. Mark, please, and I need to hear him. A couple of questions for now. I was wondering if it would be possible for the PowerPoint presentation, the complete presentation, to be posted on the Atlantic Highlands website. This is a lot of information. We heard it, but we really need to see it. And read through. So would that be possible?
I've already asked for them to email.
Okay, great. Second question. Could you pull up the front elevation drawing, like the first edit?
Yes.
Okay, so there's lots of different colors. There's lots of different or textures. I think that was the look what you were looking for. And now you can pull up the rear of the building. I was wondering if we could agree that the rear of the building, or I'll ask you this question, could the rear of the building made to look better? In other words, more like the front of the building.
I'm sure we can.
The reason I'm asking is when you drive by the building on First Avenue, you see it for about 3 seconds.
Yeah.
The residents that live behind the building see it all the time. So we want to see something nicer if the building is built. But that would be amenable to them, to be honest. That's all the questions I have.
Thank you, Mr.
Thank you.
Mr. Would you identify yourself, please? Name and address.
I'm Chelsea Moore. I'm 24 Memorial Parkway, corner of Third Avenue. Turning onto Third Avenue, trying to discuss this. Between hours of probably 2 and 7 is already not a good time. I think you would have to literally put your car into First Avenue to see past this building. The only reason we can see now is because the building where my experience is set back.
Mm-hmm.
So if your traffic engine that brings the address.
We'll certainly bring it up. Before I get to, if you have any questions on them, do not, please.
Hello, it's Sarah Collister, I'm from the town. I thought that initial sort of presentation for the building, and was one of the people mentioned the sort of angled edge, maybe sort of a curved edge at the corner to help with the sight lines. I'm kind of wondering why the sort of, you know, there it's cut in, but it's, there's sort of a long wall along Garfield is the side that cuts in, where the long wall first stays along the lot line. It seems like if you did you consider angling the side along first out, which might add, I think, like significantly more sight lines around that corner.
So if you're, again, we have a traffic professional, but if you just think about it, when you're making a right hand turn, Garfield, right? Then what we're doing is we're cutting you're driving up Garfield, we're cutting the building this way. So as you approach that intersection, your field of vision is already opening. And usually when they're stopping your car at an intersection, because of the sidewalk that the building is designed, you'll have a clear line of vision to, I'm quite confident of that, you'll have a clear line of vision to First Avenue. So there's not going to be any kind of blocking if you're making a right turn.
That's incorrect.
You can't see through your cars. The cars that will be
there are places.
What does the code speak at all to the use of tandem parking space? I noticed there are a lot of tandem parking stalls, and I wonder, that seems like kind of an inconvenience for people actually using them in the unit, even if both are assigned to the unit. What's to stop those folks from really just one car using those tandem parking spots and the other person parking on the street?
You already spoke to that in that the tandem spots will be reserved for the two-bedroom units. And there's approximately five of them. So it's not like, you know, given the percentage of parking that we have today. There's right here, we have one, two, three, four, five spots.
Oh, right.
And so that will be worked out operationally, like, yeah, to your point, like, you want a family and a two-bedroom to have that as opposed to, like, say, a roommate share, because a roommate share should be lower in the units, but it needs to be worked out. And so these are, I will just say that these are solutions that are seen as solutions for these types of buildings. We've sought to try to minimize them, but we do have five hand spots there. It's lost by single.
Okay, one more question. You said that the planters, you said the sidewalk is still pretty wide. But you didn't provide a way.
Yeah, unfortunately, I do not have a dimension on here. I think my colleague Patrick will have a dimension to give you a dimension. But I put up a slide before, and this is one of the other questions. Apologies for not having a direct dimension on this. But if I zoom in here, you can see this. So we have the overhang to our property line. I through this process a little more. The overhang is that it's through our property line, the side piece portion. The planter is, it's a little shy of that, so call it 4'8", 4'10", something like that. And you see how the plant is drawn, like a line drawn over the plant. So what that's doing is it's shielding a little bit of the parking area. And then you see this is the human scale figure. This is the curve here. So this is the dimension of the dedicated sidewalk. And again, we'll get you a dimension of that, just graphically scaling this. You know, it's probably about it.
If Patrick could also give us a dimension of the sidewalk with the utility poles and the straight lines and the street furniture between the planter and the structure and everything that else on the sidewalk, it's going to be a lot of time. That would be great.
Thank you.
In the back then.
I have a general question for the applicant team. I'll have some planting questions. What is your landscape architect here tonight? Robert, you can ask those questions too, which
engineers. You could ask the engineer, but the landscape architect isn't here.
Okay, that's fine.
Something else up. Thank you.
Hi, Chris Lucas, 61 East Garfield Avenue. So first, as someone who lives on East Garfield, it's the first and really only first through street, this side of First Avenue. We get more than our share of traffic, more than our share going over 30 miles an hour. There's eight dips in the road. In terms of congestion, there's enough cars on the street where right now you're many times playing a game where you pull over and let someone through. And the thought of the suggestion of that's where trucks should park and unload is just mind-boggling.
Yeah.
So I, as one of these Garfield, would say there is no more room for any more capacity there. It's already dangerous to take walking this dog, trying to put cars on a regular basis. More of a comment. Question, I guess, for the architect. You know, when you're given an opportunity like this to plan something, you're given a set of parameters. And I would think parameters would include the borough's policy around building ordinance and regulations. And I would expect every new building would have a couple of variance requests, right? But it just seems crazy. It seems like there was almost a disregard for many critical apartment size building heights. And, you know, these problems weren't just made up, right? You guys, your predecessors, worked hard and created policies and rules for the betterment of our citizens. And the only way was the arrogance to put something over this egregious. It's just painful. So I guess the architect, I ask, how do you present something that's so far off from the norm, from the acceptable standards? And is the expectation that they will give in and say, sure.
So the way that this works is that, in general, we look at a site, and every site has a certain amount of potential. Every site has a certain amount of constraints. There are project metrics. There are land development ordinance requirements. There are architectural goals. There's no arrogance. I reject that word entirely. So, I've already spoken about corners like this one, actually in many instances not being adequately defined in land development ordinances, and also historically and by precedent appropriately accepting our buildings, more density, these sorts of things. So we saw an opportunity to hold the street wall, to create a downtown walkable condition where you have a 1965 building, get rid of that, and put something that we think will contribute to the pedestrian life of your downtown corridor. And that's what I just said.
And 750 square foot one bedrooms where a three-story building could not accomplish that.
I've already spoken to that question to the gentleman.
Sounds arrogant, but thank you.
No more outbursts, please. And Gina, let me just say something before you begin. There's a lot of new faces in here, people that might be unfamiliar with how this all works. Right now, this is a time for questions. There will be a time for comment when the presentation is concluded. So everybody will have an opportunity to say whatever you want to say, but we want to keep the question period for the presenter. Thank you.
I think I have a legitimate question.
I know, I'm sure you do.
It's an architectural question. If you look at the description, I'm sorry, Dina, John Scale, 27 of Garfield. If you look at the description of the township on the website, it's a small Victorian town overlooking the water. Comments on the town on Facebook, beautiful harbor, great homes, wonderful people. Dense residential neighborhoods, traditional downtown, natural beauty. So when you were designing that building, what, when you look at the description of the town, what about that building says Atlantic Highlands?
Yeah, so I appreciate that question. I'm quite certain, and frankly, I was prepared to, I don't think this is necessary to go through your design guidelines. I think that the block elevation ends up being the most pertinent, thing that answers that question. So, while I've spent a lot of time in my life, that led to problems, by the way, and appreciate many of the older structures that exist here. Some of them have been beautiful and beautiful. This stretch of downtown corridor, Main Street corridor, which you also speak about, isn't about Victorian houses. There are no Victorian houses here. Even the houses behind us, as we turn the corner, are not Victorian in nature.
They're more traditional than what you're building. That's right.
Your building
sounds very modern and contemporary,
but it doesn't
fit with anything.
If you don't think that's what happened, I'm going to ask you a question.
Okay.
So, the point is that, and I spoke a lot about Latin buildings, the development of this pedestrian downtown corridor. And so not only do I think we are formally in line with existing structures, I've shown them to you, they exist already, but I'm not thinking about it. In addition, you said something critical to the success of this project, which is walkable downtown Main Street density. And that's what this building is. You use those words, and maybe not in that order.
They weren't in that order. That's the point that Brian made.
Maybe not in that order, but you're
not answering the question. Is you've repeated several questions. What makes you think this is going? And this is goes with the flow. Just because they built another monstrosity next to it, yes, the building next to it looks just like this because it was built by them. So how does this go with the rest of the downtown, with the theater, with the restaurants? How does this go with the rest of it, and then with the houses, with the residential area?
I think, again, that this is and one of the things that I did, as we were talking about this yesterday, I actually referred, because there is citing of and historic building types before you. You maybe use that word.
So what I did was
look at references for how to deal with new structures in those kinds of contexts. And there's a lot of information about how to do that. It's actually,
do you have those references at
all? Sure. All you have to do is look at the Secretary.
You want to know what to use.
Yeah, the Secretary of Interior Standards set forth by the U.S. federal government actually dictates how to bring new buildings into more historic contexts. And this isn't historically designated land or anything like that. And one could show that, you know, that Verizon building as it is, and the 7-Eleven certainly aren't historic structures that really respond.
They don't want to have them.
Well, so also, again, in my mind, these kinds of buildings, when, not crazy, but amplify pedestrian density to a downtown corridor, they grant mixed-use type of retail space, people on top. So what these buildings tend to do is generate the traffic, bring people to patronize other businesses on Main Street, make it more walkable.
That's a very dense corner, and it's already very, very busy. It's very populated, as we said before. So build something, if you want to be welcome here, then build something that will be welcome here. We love Mike's. We know the building's old. We know the parking lot's weird. We like it there. We like that building. We like the way it looks. When you come into town, we don't
want to
see two giant buildings when you come
into town. Ms. Jasko, I think now we're on to comments, right? Thank you. Sir. I'll get to you in a second, Bill. Sorry.
Steve Kurensky, 88 Third Avenue, former Beast Police. And first question is, is there going to be parking on First Avenue along the front of this building? Will there be parking?
Yes, so we have a traffic professional who will
testify. Is it yes or no answer?
Yes, a traffic professional.
Okay. Well, yeah. Also, I heard there was a traffic study done. When was that traffic study done?
We'll have the traffic engineer give you all that information.
Oh, is there a date that's been done?
Yeah.
You said it earlier in the presentation. That was done in February.
I don't believe I said anything about it.
How many parking spots are expected to be residents of the building that be street parking? In other words, is there an equation that the number of parking spots you have in the calculation, everyone gets a spot, or all the residents?
In terms of the building,
yes. But did I hear there's a percentage that there's going to be people parking out on the streets?
Didn't say that.
Or street parking?
Did not say that.
Okay. Did it assume that there didn't be a way to hear from the parking to see that traffic is going to make three kids?
No.
My name is Bill Mia, and I'm one of the senior members. And hate to see it happen, but I'd just like to say that parking on Garfield from the Mason Lodge down is no parking, so that I don't see how they could deliver another one there at this point. That happened just around the driveway, there's a sign that no parking. Parking is such a major issue in this town. I got caught three times at the red light and then got stopped in the middle of Highway 36 trying to come across.
Mr. Vina, let me stop you right there.
Architectural?
Do we have a question for the architect? As we know that the parking expert is due up next.
So the parking situation is there. It's going to have 55 spots?
Correct.
How many are designated? 25?
Yeah. The compact spaces, which are 8 by 18, as I spoke about before, are 25.
Yes. Now, the building next door, you use a lot of parking around the building.
That's
my question. I hate to see that.
Hi, Ellen McGuire, 81 East Lincoln Avenue. I'm also the captain of the municipal committee. This is not a city. We're a small town that prides itself on this small-town character and close community and natural surroundings. So when I see a building like this, I think you said pervious surface, 100% pervious, but I think an impervious surface, we pretty much have no lawn or planted areas or garden areas planned for this. That concerns me in that if you look at a heat map of this area, it's that particular side of town is pretty hot. And when we look at things to cool the air, cool that area, such as plantings, even rooftop plantings, things like that. So I was wondering, why wouldn't you consider adding some more green space?
So, I love the question, and I think we have shown that we have support of planters all along the front of the building. I would be more than open to look at some planting on the roof as well. You know, the typology of this building is such that the building is pushed to the front of the lot, and the paved parking area is the rear of the lot. Parking isn't always solved with circulation, right? There's a lot of space for cars. But I'm certainly open to plant whatever's on the roof.
Would you be open to a setback further, like a wider sidewalk, maybe some green space between the sidewalk and the building?
So we have green space right against the building, and I showed that diagram a couple of times. I think that's amazing.
The pervious coverage being almost 100% is concerning for stormwater runoff, and that area actually flooded today. I took a photo video of it. So what have you planned to manage, like, the impact of the infrastructure in terms of the increased stormwater runoff that we're going to have? We have very old systems.
We have an expert who will have a project.
Okay. And my final question is, you mentioned we have affordable housing units of one bedroom times one, two bedrooms times three, three bedrooms times two, total of six units out of our 30, is that correct?
It's a total of six units out of 30.
So can you help us understand how we're meeting the affordable housing requirements? For example, can we meet those requirements with a three-story building?
So it's a percentage subdivision, and so the building is going to be required to meet the affordable. It's a proportionate relationship. And I think the goal here was that the metrics that are put forth are metrics that I think made sense for a variety of reasons to the ownership team and the design team. And so that's what we come forward to do. And as I talked about before, because the affordable housing is important for us to do as well, we do have two three-bedrooms proposed that would be under normal circumstances not be permitted anyway. So we do think we understand those requirements and we're working to make sure
they have. Thank you for that. We do have old systems here, an old water system, it's over 100 years old. And we have stormwater systems that obviously can't necessarily handle capacity right now. So I would ask, are you considering making amendments or improvements or offering some help to the municipality in terms of improving the infrastructure there to manage the increased demand?
I said I can't answer that. That would be a question.
Mr. Brodsky, would that be something more appropriate for the engineer?
Yeah.
Mr.
Russo?
Me?
Yeah.
I want to get on to the rest of the presentation.
Carol Barnett, 17 East Garfield Avenue. There's so much that doesn't comply with this proposal. Have you ever been asked to resubmit a plan that conforms?
So that's a, you know, that's a very difficult question. Certainly, obviously, there are sites that have land development ordinances written for them that have a site, let's say, but many do not. And that's why there are books like this.
In your opinion, is it possible for you to come up with a plan that conforms to our ordinance?
Not on this site.
Do you have any questions?
Hi, Laura Moody, but I care about the town as well. So, not to harp on the variance thing, but it is concerning that the council comes forward with so many variances. And I do recognize that there may just be or construction project, there's a range in terms of what's acceptable or not. But, so this is a question that is really partly for the architect, I think people have asked it in a variety of ways, but also to the board, what happens next and what are the expectations? The variances are presented, there's discussion about it, but is there then any forward movement to modify the project to make it come within code and within some, and eliminate or mitigate some of the variances, and I think some of things that have come to mind, and the question that seems to be difficult to answer is, why couldn't the project be done within that, those parameters if it's of a smaller scale? Why does it have to be four stories? Why does it have to be 30 minutes? You know, no one is against redevelopment, but if we can comply with the intent to make good use of land, and also not try to squeeze everything into a dense kind of urbanistic mentality, then, you know, we can even win. So the question is, what happens when the project has variances with this? Is the architect asked to go back and make changes, or is it, well, we mentioned variances, and we'll vote on them, and yes, we'll pass them with the variances, and then you get what you get? Or is there an onus as a whole to try to make the project better and meet the needs of those parameters?
If the answer to your question is, you will have to see how this application evolves, because it's a process. The applicant is here, the applicant is hearing questions, we'll hear comments, we'll hear questions, maybe comments from the board, and how they react to that. They may not react to that, and they may say, we think we've done a great project, and this is the best that can be done.
So the architect is not asked to consider...
It's not up to the board to tell to design the project for them. If they design a project that the board finds unacceptable, the board will fund that. If they find it acceptable and they think the variances that they're asking for are reasonable under any context, then they've been granted.
How many variances and at what level are acceptable? I mean, this is quite a few.
There's a black letter law on that. It doesn't say you can only have so many variances or you have to have so many variances. That's a matter of the board. You can have a lot of very, very tiny variances that don't make a lot of impact. Or you can have a couple of really big variances.
Well, I guess my thing would be that if there are things that can be done so that the building can be built without the variances, and that can be done by addressing the scale, has that been considered?
So you have to hear a lot of different witnesses tonight that are going to go over that, so that's the process that we're going through. That
we still have a lot of questions.
Well, that's what we're doing, so we have to hear all the witnesses.
Do we have any other questions for the public? Do we have any on Zoom?
Yeah. My name is Clay Halverson. I'm from Middletown. The building with respect to where the three bay bank and the Peter Circuit is, what is the distance from the building to the curb line?
I'm not quite sure.
I'm not sure I understand the question, though.
He's asking for the distance from a building to a sidewalk on the other side.
No, no, but on the same side of the street to where it meets the street. What is the distance from the street or the curb line there to the building that you're proposing?
Right, so I apologize for not having a dimension on my sidewalk. I showed that graphically. We'll get that to you in later testimony.
Okay. Well, let's see if I can answer this question. But, will you consider not doing what other buildings and other builders have done in town, which is to build into the allowable space on the primary. So there's two other jobs that happened in the past few years on First Avenue where the builders built into the primaries, which is a 10-foot space allowable. Jobs had to be shut down. JCP&O had to come in. They had to install temporary alley arms, and some allocations had to happen. I'm trying to bring this up in question form. Just to see if you're considering the severity of this and if you're applying that in your design.
Yeah, I'm roughly sure I mean, certainly there is an issue or a problem that you're alluding to. I mean, we're proposing to get a
I think we can have Mr. Ward answer that. That's probably the only one who will understand the question.
Yeah. All right, thank you.
Did you have a question, sir?
My name is Jose Ortiz. I'm in 13 East Lincoln. I'm just curious from the perspective of the architectural design. What was the business plan? Did it require to have 30 apartments that you could make a substantial profit. What was the business plan?
For the architect?
Yeah, you must have shared that you needed 30 units. How many units for share the architect so that he could build his one?
I'm asking
you to put together.
I saw it as an architect.
Based on a requirement for a number of apartments for the business.
Oh, you're suggesting if I got more units and I can create more money?
No, that's not how it works. That's not how it works.
We're proposing something that makes sense for owner one. And I said that over and over again. It has nothing to do with.
But why the 3 stories versus the 4 stories?
And I've spoken to that also. I think that it's warranted to say that corner lots can handle more density and more height because they are beacons that break streets off, right? That's what corners do. And many times, land development ordinances do not specifically call out how to treat corners. Why is a corner different? For instance, a corner has 2 front parts, right? This is a lot, mid block. 1 front yard, 1 backyard, 2 sideways. We don't really have sideways. We have 2 fronts and back. And then maybe a side, and maybe a back on the other one, right? So the way that we have to approach this building from a site plan point of view, from a massing point of view, is entirely different than the way typical building is built. And many times, I can tell you this, sir, one of the most of the buildings that I am for reports on have to do with this issue of how you do the corners. And that's what we're trying to do here. Can you explain the issue of the 2 corners associated with having to build a building with 2 corners? Why 4 stories versus 3 stories? 2 corners is, well, what you do is 1 corner has 2 fronts, right? Corner lots.
Well, let's kind of the 2 corners. And the other thing is, you have to do the corners. And we've spoken about why we're seeking that. We will have further experts talk about that. We've talked about the FAR. We've talked about the height of the building. We've talked about how the building has been imagined to sit on the site. We've talked about the new quarters. And we've talked about the street wall at 32 centimeters and then a setback at 9 feet for that addition. And that's what we are trying to do for the house. Yes.
So the business plan for these apartments never, did they have a perspective of maybe how do you sell them or rent them and houses for a view of the bay? Is that what a 4th floor scene? Is there,
guys don't build apartments for the necessarily for the public good of the township. You're building it because you're making a buck.
Yeah, if you're asking if it's not relevant to the board, but if you're asking if a project has to be economically feasible, of course it does.
So the only way that this project will be feasible that it has 4 levels and 30
a certain parts? Number of units that would be necessary for it to be economically feasible.
So if you didn't get that 4th level, but it was project would not be economically feasible?
I didn't say that. But that might be the case. I don't know.
Good question.
Let's
see. The perspective would be that the building would not go off unless it was forced.
You're saying that every project that's proposed has to have an economic feasibility to it, otherwise it can't get built.
Thank you.
Any other questions from the public?
Yeah, it's not 2900 Avenue. You mentioned before some the advantages of having a building here
the walkability and the change that is blended in the current. Could you also tell me other benefits that the borough will receive from this building? And do you see any negatives that the borough will be impacted by granting all of these variances that you're requesting?
Well, so you will have a, I want to play that speaks about positive and negative criteria of the variance thoughts that would be ethically spoken to. I think that the density, first of all, density is an inherently sustainable thing. Bringing more people and concentrating, we're not talking about what is happening here, but concentrating supply of infrastructure, supply of parking, supply in general is inherently a healthy thing for municipalities. And I already spoke also to the kind of foot traffic that this density will bring to the Main Street corridor, which I also see as positive. And normally, and I can't cite a specific document or paper, but there's been a lot of research done on how urbanizing corridors, and I don't mean urbanizing meaning, let's make that as an island city, I mean urbanizing meaning creating walkable main streets, actually helps with public safety, it helps with crime reduction, it helps by slowing traffic, it helps by doing all sorts of things that I actually think would be beneficial to that corner network.
And I just question that because as an architect, you realize that the borough has these certain ordinances for the purpose of keeping the borough the way the borough leaders think that the borough wants to be kept. So by asking for so many variances, it's kind of making it look like the Carl doesn't know what he's talking about when it's talking about his people, but he was the architect too.
No. And that's not at all how I have sought to okay you sure. And if I offended you, citing here that corner condition, the non-standard lot that we have here within your land development ordinance, given the opportunities that lot I think has with its relationship to downtown corridor, the Main Street corridor, the water, the resources that we have around it, and what allows it in my mind, says to provide that, and maybe amplify it a little bit in certain instances to get a product that's converted. And that's what we're presenting.
Thanks.
You're welcome. Very well. Are there any other public questions? No? Thank you very much.
Thank you. I'm going to use my computer up for.
So, why don't we take a very short break? Tonight's going to be now. Why don't we reconvene at 9:30 sharp?
Mr. Chairman, if you can invite me out, I know that we have the applicant's engineer who's about to start his testimony. Under the board license, given the last witness took over 2 hours,
I think that the board should probably go through the direct testimony of this witness, and then you can give the time when you're ready to stop and carry it to the August meeting to continue.
To the regularly scheduled August meeting.
The regularly scheduled August meeting to continue.
Okay, then?
August 8th?
August 3rd.
Third.
August 3rd.
Let me double check that.
First Thursday, Lord.
Yeah, it'll be the first Thursday.
It was on my birthday last year. Thursday.
Okay. Thanks, sir.
Okay, thank you, Mr. Chair, back on the record. Next witness is Patrick Ward from Insight Engineering, who's a project engineer. If you have Mr. Ward's phone in.
The board raised your right hand and swore to you, swear upon the testimony you have to give, will be the truth, hold your truth, and the truth. And then address to the public.
Patrick Ward with Insight Engineering. Business address is 1955 Route 34, Fort Lincoln. Thanks. And Mr. Ward, if you would, just provide the board your background and experience as a professional engineer here in New Jersey.
Sure. So I have a Bachelor of Science in Civil Engineering from Drexel University. I'm currently a licensed professional engineer in the state. I've been licensed for just over 10 years now. Testified as a, in the capacity of a civil engineer in front of numerous land use boards in the state, including more than a handful of times in front of this board.
Mr. Ward, just referencing any of the exhibits that have been marked so far, just walk the board through property as it exists today, initially, and then what's proposed as part of the application.
Yeah, so I'll start with the existing conditions and the survey, which Mr. Stein noted was already marked in most exhibits. I'm going to reference when I put it up on the easel and it's on the screen now. We prepared a site rendering of the property. It's within the exhibit that, I don't have that number, but the PowerPoint presentation is your side. So if you can give me that exhibit number so I can speak to it properly. Just so I make sure if I reference it. That exhibit is a color type rendering of a site plan. It is based on an aerial image that we take mid-year, on the current as May of this year. So you can see that the building to the north is built. Not much has changed out there. Otherwise, you can see the building to the north is done with their parking spaces. That was prepared as of today. So I will start the existing conditions and you know, laser pointer that you can still use that can't stand up. But I will talk about the existing. So we did talk about how it's a one-story retail building with two tenants. We have the liquor store and the food bar. The site today is mostly impervious, as was mentioned by Mr. Garber, and that's the result of the building. It's an only parking lot. Their landscaped areas, if you want to call it that, are fully stoned with landscape stone, though by ordinance that's considered impervious. So again, the site mostly impervious. I will get into this later on. We are increasing the impervious coverage, which I'll describe how we're attenuating that with our proposed stormwater management. I think everyone in the room knows, but I'll go through the points of access. There are four driveways at the property today. We have two on First Avenue, one in, one out. We have two on Garfield, East Garfield, which is unique for such a small frontage. We have a two-way at the rear, which is for your loading and your dumpsters that are located in the rear. And we have a one-way that heads into the main head-on parking in front of the building. There are, I know one of the board members asked about trees. I will describe existing trees, I will describe the landscaping, and be happy to answer those questions. So there are some trees on the property that will be removed, and the trees that I think a lot of the focus is going to be on, if I'm correct, is along the rear property line. Those are on the Masonic Lodge property. But on the First Avenue frontage, there are five ornamental trees. They're smaller in height, but there are five across the frontage. And there's one, we believe it to be a sycamore tree on East Garfield between the sidewalk and the curb. Today, in terms of on-street parking, pretty limited due to the driveway. So it was mentioned earlier that East Garfield Avenue is restricted from no parking from the Masonic Lodge property to the corner. And while I don't have the ordinance for why that was restricted, I believe it's because there are two access points. We're seeking to eliminate those access points. And I'll get into that parking ordinance later on. But there are two striped parking spaces
on First Avenue, right in front of the property. So those are the existing conditions, and we'll segue into the proposed improvements, is that we are proposing to eliminate and remove all existing site improvements. So that's everything, the building, the pavement, the curbs, anything within the property lines will be disturbed. We're proposing the four-story mixed-use building with 1,270 square feet of retail space on the ground level, which again is focused towards the intersection of over 3 floors of apartment park, 30 in total. And now for my public, my rendering.
This is not the mark yet.
It's within 8 foot.
Okay.
So,
you got it.
So, Mr. Garber described a few things about building location setback. You'll note that this exhibit actually, I think, does a good job of showing where the ground floor is and where the upper floor is. So there's a heavier line that you'll see where the doors are, excuse the reflection, but you'll see that the building is set back over 5 feet from the right-of-way at the ground level. What that allows for is a series of planting beds, and Mr. Garber did explain how the sidewalk will feel more open and wide than that at that point. It also then allows for the upper floors to be cantilevered over, including the balcony. So one question was raised earlier about the width of the sidewalk. So from the back of the curb to the property line today is about 7 feet plus, 7 feet 3 inches. That's to the property line. So what we're seeking to do is take that, and that's from the back of the curb, not from the pavement. You can add 6 inches to that for the curb width if you'd like. But from the back of the curb to the property line, you have just over 7 feet. With the additional 5+ feet, you're looking at from the curb line to the first floor building design, you have over 12 feet in width, which is wider than most areas in Atlantic Highlands. We've done a few projects, our company in Atlantic Highlands, where we've seen as narrow as 4 feet, which becomes a challenge for pedestrians. So our goal here is to keep the ground floor as wide feeling as possible. You also note, and Mr. Garber talked about this, that the angle of the building at the corner, it serves an architectural function, but it also serves a site distance function. On our exhibit, and it is a little difficult to see, but it is on our site plans as well, we do show the required federal standard for site triangles, ASHTO, this is the word you always hear, the acronym. We show those at all decision points, which means every which way you can turn in and around this property. We meet the ASHTO standard, which the county uses at the intersection of East Garfield and First Avenue for a car approaching First Ave from East Garfield and making a left turn. That's the critical one here. There is something to be said about setting back that ground floor building line, the additional 5 feet. It does provide a more open vista. There will be on-street parking on First Avenue, as we know, which kind of affects all of the side streets. But in terms of what we can control on our site, we've focused heavily on providing that site distance. And based on our analysis and the traffic consultants, the different engineering company, I think we both agree that we provide adequate site distance for the public streets and the driveway. At the ground level, we have the enclosed building areas, which are shown in a more solid hue of the brown orange color. And then what you'll see is the transparent section, which is the covered parking area, and then the remainder is gray, that's the exposed to the sky parking lot. So you have the enclosures that Mr. Garber described for the ground floor of the building, and the remainder of the site, as you can see behind the building, is going to be the parking lot. We're proposing 48 spaces, two of which are immediately behind. The access will be to the parking area will be from East Garfield Avenue. The right-of-way improvements here, there's quite a few. So we're seeking to replace paper sidewalks and all the sidewalks. We're seeking to upgrade and make correct what we need to program. Right now, it's not, in my opinion, a compliance kind of standards. We're seeking to make that compliant. We are repaving the half width of First Avenue across most of the time on First Avenue, and then there's a portion of that project which we're seeking to provide full of pavement. And really, the reason for that is to avoid issues with the pavement long-term when it comes to the new utility connections. It's something that the county will require us to do as well, so we're absolutely agreeing to do that. Our site plan set identifies the areas that will be paved and the limits of those pavements. In terms of utility connections, we anticipate all utility connections to be via First Avenue.
Thank you. all of them knew that it's made in 20% of the building, very much over the soil, which you can see, and put your hand on it, and just say, so for comparison sake, our site runoff in the proposed condition, the final design, is only 18% of the contact with that soil. So, the access is 80% destruction, and here is that standard. So, in terms of the questions raised by the public about the turf waters, the soil, we have no direct connection to any, for parking, I'll touch upon what we're proposing. We have a fully off-street space, which is something that you had mentioned earlier. Five of the spaces are located in a tandem, and 75 of them have. As far as we're proposing, we have 10 spaces to ensure that the roof is a mix. And moving early on our phone, we have a couple of reports that we're on. We are proposing 10. At this time, we're strictly complying with the requirement of 1 day and having to be on day one. And we also didn't have the time to mark our spaces to do that, so that the future student parking spaces are taken. With this, we are moving in each other 7 spaces, and I was talking on the phone. And then, coming out of this position, we have 2 on-street parking spaces at this time. But one of the on-street parking spaces are on the front of it. With the reduction of the 4-cent driveway down to 1, we now have more on-street parking spaces as a result. The guard is supposed to have the guard on the ground to get it. To strike the faces of self-explanatory, we'd be happy to accommodate that as well. I know you don't have anything to say about it. So, right now there's 2 on First Avenue and Alamo, and we have up to 7 drivers. So, if we increase to 5, there's questions raised about where the retail patients are going to start. So, that 5 space increase doesn't quite fit the requirement of 6 units for the retail space. But it does get us pretty close to the number. In terms of in terms of lighting, You are proposing lighting, Mr. Donovan, you're proposing lighting north of Park Manor, including the driveway and country Garfield. You have one outside from the east side of the building, it's on the residential side, but be very clear about those lights. They are down here only, and they're at a height on the building. They're not up on the second floor, which is just a bit, burning our whole street area, and they project out the community to take the family. Do you feel, I don't know if you can tell me from the building, do you feel that the lighting is complex to build and architecture, if you heard the demo, or do you have to say to, the Park Manor, or the safety statement, this is not the point, not compliant with the building itself is under that 2.0 GL. The roof deck itself pushes over by about 3,000 square feet. And based on the competition with the board plans, the board engineer rather, the roof deck is being heated and then buffer strip, the residential zone, everything to require the roof property, the roof buffer is 5 feet. Finally, common open space 30% of the development that opened, the fact is required, the 19.5%. So we achieved that, with surrounding areas that are going to be open to the property.
Mr. Ward, I know you've had an opportunity to review the wetlands report.
So, and you provided a point-by-point response to that, and you can all come in for a second, but I believe
report, make sure all items are touched upon, and then just I jotted down a couple additional questions at this point. So just one point of clarification at this time is we have a disagreement on the interpretation of the building height requirement, right? As I said, as I mentioned earlier, I'm interpreting the code to have the proposed height result in a D variance where the applicant indicated they believe they're below the 10% threshold to go from C to D. I believe there'll be a lot more discussion and testimony on the parking requirement itself, how we come across the total required EV credits. With regards to the compact parking stalls, I do want to note that our code does not permit any spaces below the 9x18 requirement. So, Mr. Ward, am I correct? 25 spaces are proposed to be undersized and non-compliant?
Yes, 25 are identified as compact at 8 feet wide, and I agree that your code requires 9x18. There is no provision for a compact.
And it's my understanding that RSIS follows suit to that as well. Minimum parking stall size per RSIS is also 9x18.
I believe that's the case.
I understand the question.
Each space requires a waiver. It's a deviation from an RSI standard.
Right.
Standard says 9x18. They don't meet that standard. So
it's not,
you have to request a waiver.
It's not a Swedish waiver. It's a waiver for each one. Is that correct?
Sure.
And actually, I took a look at this survey today because it doesn't talk about the number or volume of deviations. Then you have de minimis waivers and you have exceptions. Minimis waivers this board can give. Exceptions has to be an application to the Department of Community Affairs. And one of the examples in Bristol is parking spaces may be under de minimis exceptions, may be in front of de minimis exceptions for not meeting the dimensional requirements. But here we're not talking about one, we're talking about two requirements.
With regards to the summary of relief requested at this point, I just wanted to circle back on my report, page 5, item 6F, section 15085F, that requires landscaping within the parking lots. Has that been addressed, or are you proposing to address that, or is relief needed as well for that one?
No, we would be seeking relief from that as well, and do we do?
Thank you. With regard to signage on site, is there any detail available at this point for site identification signage?
Slide 29 showed up.
Yeah, so this shows a sign at the retail entrance. I would assume that it's not exactly clear on this, but there will be a sign identifying the street address at the resident entrance.
Okay. Is it accurate to say that the parking in the rear of the structure is to be dedicated to the residential units only?
Yes, that's our anticipation.
And is there going to be signage directing the public that that's not open parking for the retails, or any on-street signage to control that?
It's not indicated on the plan at this time, but we can work with the owner and manager company to determine what's appropriate. I think that would be an appropriate suggestion.
At that same location, with regards to signage, when you're trying to leave the site, I see there's a stop bar proposed. Is there an associated stop sign?
Yes. So we do have a stop sign. Like I said, the driveway is wider than the 24 feet required to accommodate the dumpsters and the doors. We do have a stop sign here at the edge of it, the western edge, that is faced towards where the vehicles are. We also are, and this is something that we'll show on the subsequent site plan revision. We have the stop bar on the OEO striping, but and this is really hard to see on here, but we do want to mark in white letters stop right below the stop bar as well. So we're trying to do as much as we can to encourage stopping at that point.
And the reason, did you look for a way to locate that stop sign adjacent to the stop bar and not put it significantly forward and offset from the stop location?
Yeah, so the 24 feet goes from the right parking bank right to the side of the refuse room. So any projection sign off of that wall would encroach in the 24 feet, which would, like, even if it was up high, would at some point sure get hit. And then suspending it from the ceiling is potentially an option, but again, the clear height underneath on the ground floor is somewhat limited. So if any taller vehicle was going through there, there's a chance that sign would be hit, struck from above. So we feel that that's, you know, the stop sign where it's shown, there's no interruption to it, there's no landscaping around it. It's really the first thing you'll see when you look at East Garfield from when you're exiting. And it was with in collaboration with the rest of the project team, including the traffic consultant, we felt that this was the best solution.
It's a real concern for me, based on the distance that it's set past the stop bar itself. It's, are you able to scale off and measure how far to the west it is from the actual drive aisle? It looks significant, 10 plus feet out of the travel lane itself. It's a very critical location, right? You have a building blocking your view to the right when you're leaving the site, and you're traversing that sidewalk there with a lot of pedestrian traffic potential.
We understand the concern. It's something we can look at further.
So again, I started to discuss this with the architect. Has there been any consideration made to reduce the size of that building to provide space for a stop sign and a spot for pedestrians to get out and not be pinned in the drive aisle against the building itself?
Yeah, it's something that I think we do have to take a hard look at and likely accommodate. I think providing pedestrian access there would alleviate the stop sign issue as well. It's going to open up that mouth of that drive aisle. We do provide the necessary astro site triangles on both sides of that driveway, and the trash room, really our company's direction was put on that angle, again, to provide that site distance. The decision point, which is real, when you analyze site triangles where the driver's eye is shown at the vertex of that triangle, and in my opinion, that's where they're supposed to, that's where they stop in relation to the edge of curve, not the stop bar or anything like that. In our experience, that's a reasonably accurate location for the driver's eye. It's really the first place the driver's eye is going to be when they see the public improvements. And we feel that since the site triangles are maintained and open, that this has no added safety issues beyond what is normal of any driveway traversing a side street in Atlantic Highlands or even First Avenue, which there are a few.
Was that considered as well? You mentioned adding parking spots on First Avenue. That same site triangle, if there's additional cars parked there, does that hold true?
So the parking spaces on First Avenue are beyond our control.
But hypothetically, yeah, if they were there, would that still hold true?
Yeah, so you take your site distance triangles from the edge of the travel lane. So for our case, it is considered, well, the way the county does it, within this, that's not to see on this due to the scale, but the county, when they improve First Avenue and happen to repave it or restripe it, they add those flares and see across the street from our property. Those follow along what the county requires for their site distance. So we would anticipate a similar type of shape on First Avenue. We can look into that further. We unfortunately can't see the future of where exactly the striping would be, but we can look at that further and check into that. Ultimately, it's going to be in conjunction with the borough and the county where the striped parking space is ultimately go. But we can certainly look at that.
Commercial mixed-use development proposed fronting on a county right away. I recognize this application has been sent to the county planning board for review. Have you obtained approval at this point, or what's the? Can you tell us the status?
Sure. So yes, site plan application was submitted to the county planning board. Similar timing when we received board engineer's comments, we received some county comments from the traffic professional and the engineer. We have. Our latest plan revision was revised not only to address the CMA review comments, but also to address the county comments, and they were submitted at the same similar time. So we still have a pending application. We're awaiting confirmation that will be appearing in front of the development of the new committee for this project. But we feel that we've addressed their technical review comments with this latest submission.
Would you be able to reconcile any proposed on-street parking on First between the ask to this board and county planning board?
We can look into it. Trying to think on, based on prior experiences in Atlantic Highlands on First Avenue. The county planning board, I believe, doesn't have jurisdiction. They don't handle the striping. I believe it's the, you know, actually, I don't know which department it is, but it's not the county planning board that tells us where to strike.
Are you showing proposed striping on First Avenue in this plan set?
We it's something we should look into, and maybe at that point consult with county traffic department.
Because it's been alluded to by professionals on your team already that there's a benefit by losing some of the current access points by way of adding on-street parking. So I'd recommend that be depicted on a plan set that you're asking this board to approve and reconcile with the county simultaneously. So there's a reduction overall of ingress-egress points from the existing site to the current site. Is it your opinion that a single point of access and egress to a parking lot of this size is appropriate?
But to stand to that, I would defer to our traffic consultant on that. For mixed-use projects of this scale, yes, I've seen them with one in, one out.
Just I'm looking for confirmation that all improvements on the existing site are to be demolished, correct? There's no saving parts of foundations or anything?
Right.
This is a clean slate application.
Correct,
okay. From our rear property line down to the curb. Utilities themselves, gas meters and electric meters, could you just confirm one more time they will be fully enclosed within the property and not project into the right of way?
Correct. So, and again, this seems to be something that comes up often with mixed use multifamily. We have a lot of space here, which again we're finished with like a river rock, gravel. That's where we anticipate all the meter banks to be. So off the right of way, and then you know, really out of view from the public. That's just relatively narrow alley.
So it'll be in like an alleyway off the sidewalk. Is it going to be gated or closed off?
You know what? We'll clarify that, Mr. Romar. I am not sure. I would assume yes. I know there's other projects that not only the counties have built, but other projects that other folks have built that, whether it's a trash room or meter banks, there is usually a gate keeping the public away.
Jumping over to the stormwater management and grading component quickly, you mentioned implementation of permeable pavement so is it correct that there's a three inlet collection system that is disconnected from any system? There's no positive discharge.
Right. So, and to clarify that, without getting too technical and put everyone to sleep, the inlets that are shown are for overflow. They call it emergency overflow inlets, and what that means is if the permeable pavement was to clog at the surface, would the property still function? So, it's kind of a worst case scenario, but the role of permeable pavement is to just immediately soak in rainwater and put it into the storage deck below. If there was ever a reason that the pavement clogged, the inlets just collect, and then they're connected with perforated pipes. And the goal is that the inlets would collect the water, send it into the perforated pipe, which would then bleed out from the storage bin, which wouldn't be able to get the clogged. The other part of why those inlets are proposed is to collect the roof downspouts in the columns. You can't just have the roof downspouts just go right into the stone storage bed under pavement. We need a structure to join, and they serve that purpose as well.
May I just get a clarifying question for the previous hearing?
Mm-hmm.
So is it my understanding that that is 1.894 square feet size being impervious, which is 19,011 square feet? That was from the stormwater.
The report?
Yes. I just want to make sure that I fully understand what the subject area is. Can you quantify that for me?
I can't. One more. I don't believe I have a copy of it. Do you mind? Is it on the plan?
It's included in the report, but it's exempt.
Oh, you're looking at the danger.
It's going to have a few follow on just because it's taking a little while to understand.
Yes, no.
I would like to
point out
this catchment area, and then
mm-hmm.
if you could identify it on that plan for me.
Yeah, so, all right. The first sheet that you have, and then you reference the numbers of 19,011 square feet impervious. Impervious is 894. This is the pre-development drainage area map. So, in order for us to come up with the calculations that say we reduce runoff for the largest storm by 80%, we need to identify and model what's current. And that's what this does, right? So what this has is we do drainage paths and area. It's a whole modeling of pervious areas and impervious. We keep them separate and then we combine them.
Mm-hmm.
So that's where this comes from, and that's where those existing models develop from. And then the proposed drainage area, same
drill. Yeah.
So that is, and we use that to, in this case, a smaller site in terms of civil engineering, stormwater management. We have total site runoff as just one area, one subcategory.
Correct.
Does that make sense?
Yeah, I absolutely understand that. I guess my question is can you quantify it for me? Because I guess what I'm trying to understand in my head is that the subcategory area, so the pervious area is 894 square feet in that site plan, and that's intended to capture the rainwater.
Mm-hmm.
Based on the location of it, you're not going to capture all of it. So I'm curious where the rest of it's going to go, and if you quantified how much that is.
Yeah, so I think I'm following you. So the pervious area, 894 square feet, doesn't collect any of the impervious runoff.
Okay, so that's not this. So what is intended for the subcatchment?
So, it,
that's how you quantified your current number, right? Because it's weighted.
It is.
Yes.
A
fraction of that.
Right.
So I'm trying to ascertain what that number is.
What are final curve numbers?
Your final curve number is 39, and you got it by getting calculated with the wages of area,
no,
which is a fraction of that area. And that, it's just trying, I'm trying to basically understand, based on your impervious area, how the pervious area is intended to provide the relief for the
treatment. Yeah, okay.
I'm not able to quantify what
I have. Right, I follow you. So, the curve numbers, everything you referenced, 39 is a typical pervious area.
It is, absolutely.
98 is impervious. That's just like a percentage of like the runoff that leaves that area. So, pervial pavement, there's a couple ways you can analyze it. We analyzed it as curve number of 98, so which is a very conservative measure, which means that all runoff hitting it leaves it, basically. What we're modeling it as regular pavement, and we're just providing infiltration storage across the entire plant. There's a way you can model permeable pavement, which is, I would say, more accurate and less conservative.
So I was just kind of curious how it was modeled for this project.
Yeah, so I believe this plan shows that we have 19,828 square feet with a curve number of 98. So we, in my opinion, it's a more conservative way of calculating the proposed runoff condition without any stormwater management. And then the areas that are going to the permeable pavement are the roof areas and the entirety of the rear parking lot. There are areas that go towards the Monmouth County right-of-way, and a portion that goes to Garfield Avenue. That's what's in front of the building and balconies. The county holds us to a standard of reducing the 25-year storm of all site plan applications. We've exceeded that greatly. They do allow runoff as long as it's reduced towards the right. So that's the areas in front of the building on Garfield and then First Avenue is where stormwater is.
Yeah, exactly. So it's not actually, it's not going to be okay, that's what you realize.
Correct. Correct, yeah. So, and that's a, well, I don't want to get into the nitty gritty, but the we are greatly reducing what's heading to First Avenue. The way the property is today, if you did buy it, you can kind of tell visually that the building itself is a couple feet above First Avenue, which is a little bit of a slope up there. From the back curb line, it slopes about 3 or 4 feet down the First Avenue. Everything comes out that way. We're looking to change areas on the property to make things a little bit more flatter. And we're substantially reducing the area from the First Avenue.
I think the elevation still means it's the First Avenue as the Garfield, right? It's just the left corner is really your highest point.
It's that northeast corner is the highest point, but if you look at the grades, like the catch basins that are in there are lower than the driveway apron at Garfield Avenue. So you mentioned it, everything going to those areas is completely collected. So when you look at our stormwater report, we do show where we don't show a zero CFS runoff to the storm, right? Because we don't collect everything. What we don't collect is what's heading in front of the building towards the right.
No, it absolutely does. So I guess the intent of the term is just for
it's collecting and infiltrating all surface, all runoff. That's the building and the rear. The point is, we opted because of the small size of the site. It's not really, from a construction standpoint, it doesn't really make sense to have a small portion of the property be permeable pavement and then the rest be standard asphalt. One, it's tough to build, and usually it's an ongoing maintenance issues. It's better to have a large area, and we have the under the building is standard pavement. And on the site plan, you'll see that as required in the state manual, we have quite some reserve separation.
Yeah. I'm curious.
Well, I think you're complaining different things. Okay. 874 is the existing.
Oh, is that landscape? So, what are you talking about as impervious asphalt in the impervious?
We're counting it as impervious.
Oh, okay.
Whereas, okay. In reality, you can reduce the flood damage. That's a whole purpose.
That's where the confusion had come from, because all of that was presented as if it was going to be a part of a pervious asphalt and was going to provide additional drainage, but it's not actually quantified in the numbers. And so, I was trying to ascertain whether that was actually impervious or something.
Yeah, no, that's fine, and that's I think we're on the same page. I think it's the way we analyzed it and the way we try to do our stormwater management calculations and to see how much we need to reduce. We treated the permeable pavement as if it was standard asphalt. It just so happens to also function as a stormwater management device. So it's in my opinion, it's a very conservative measure. There's a way to reduce the curb numbers. Probably would result in less storage bed, but we're doing it the conservative way, which I think is the right way.
And I think this kind of leads to a nice, my colleague here will probably address me more for the landscape portion of it, mm-hmm. But, you know, as I've spoken before, we are concerned with the urban key island that we need to be presented, we just don't need to be so I kind of think probably going to have to be control and
thank you for the stuff. And with that, it sure would. And I think one of the good solutions that was raised was possibly providing some sort of green roof system. I think that's a practical application here, you know, beyond anything else in the ground level. But that's something the team can consider.
Thank you very much. Apologize.
No, we got it.
Grading wise, you have 3 e-inlets, right?
Mm-hmm.
Disconnected. I believe you said the grade at the apron is higher than the lowest inlet. Well, the inlets are all the same. When your system goes out of capacity, does it stay on site, and where is there's positive flow out to East Garfield, correct?
It's not to East Garfield. So the grading plan indicates in the event of failure, right? Because we have to assume that we have to plan for failure no matter what. We don't want to make a bathtub in the parking lot. So we have a feature on First Avenue side that's a scupper at the bottom of the wall that's separated the parking area from First Avenue that in the event of an overflow needed, it would actually go out that way, not to East Garfield. Where East Garfield's driveway sits is a good foot and change above the gutter of First Avenue. So we want to maintain natural flow paths. And again, that's contemplated as an emergency overflow situation, not counting that for, assuming we're going to just have some water runoff as part of our production.
And where is that depicted on the utility plan?
It's not on this plan, it's not on this rendering, it doesn't make sense for this rendering, but it's on the grading and drainage plan. There's a note for a stepper within the building wall. Yeah, I believe it has a link to it.
Okay, so that goes below or beneath the building,
mm-hmm.
and it's going to cascade across the First Ave sidewalk?
Okay. Wouldn't agree with the word cascade, but I would say in the sense of why we did it, when we analyzed the stormwater management here, in all the storms between the 10, the 25, and the 100, there is no runoff through there. The 100-year storm is fully below the pavement level. Where you would see a situation where that happens is if there was complete failure of infiltration below. With the permeability results we got from the geotech, they're in excess of 20 inches per hour. So even a reduced permeability rate, I don't think we'd see any emergency overflow there. It would be a complete failure, which is something that with proper maintenance of permeable pavement, it will be avoided. I mean, it's an unusual situation because it's a mixed-use project like this and of this kind of design, but the goal is to provide some positive outlet. And East Garfield there is higher where the driveway enters than the corner.
What is the maintenance plan for your porous asphalt area?
Yeah, so I knew this was something that Stevie had raised, and the county will require it to. And we may have submitted an operation enabled plan. For asphalt permeable pavement, it's regular, sounds a little silly and hokey, but there's actually vacuum trucks that you can employ that vacuum out the permeable pavement. And it sounds silly, but it's true. The sediment is the problem. Finer sediments. So you vacuum it and ensure that it works and functions. At some point, just like any other case, sometimes you see every 6 months. So it's something that's absolutely required. Otherwise, the pavement will break down and will clog.
And that is something that will be done. You said there was an operations and maintenance manual?
There is, yes. It's required by the county and it's required by the borough. just for for our project, it's just to the north, the 158 portion of the park, not all the parking spaces, but most of the parking spaces are made from the last fall. I mean, that would be the location functions. As designed.
Because as we were talking about with failure, right? Like if that porosity was clogged, there was no infiltration, it would go out to somewhere that's located on the First Ave.
Correct.
Okay. And that's the only like emergency?
Because everything to the east and southeast, and really the one that falls to the north is even higher than that, but everything to the east and southeast is at a higher elevation just due to existing grade. So that's in the direction of natural flow path that property is today. If this was a residential subdivision, a big storm management basin, we do the same thing where any emergency overflow isn't something that you don't really quantify, you actually just kind of identify where it's going to go, and you want to follow that in grant advance. So this is more of a, you know, long-term setting of solar matter.
Has there been consideration to make a physical connection to discharge to the system in First Avenue?
Yeah, and we, something we also dealt with at 158 First Avenue, the nearest system, and I believe it's still technically a county system, and this is a Amber Arrows that is part of the cell, we'll have to see on the monitor, but it is, you can see East Park.
I think you pinch in.
Can I?
Plus
is another way to zoom in as well. The if you continue on West Garfield, down here to West Avenue, there is infrastructure here that heads out to the Many Mine Creek. That's the nearest public infrastructure. So conceivably, yes, we could extend stormwater management conduit across First Avenue to West Avenue, but similar to how we treated 158 First Avenue, we don't feel it's necessary. We feel that we can address it on site with the hyperinnovation rate.
I'm sure you've dealt with it as well. We've dealt with it here within Atlantic Highlands. Disconnected, isolated infiltration measures to address the additional stormwater runoff. Works based on your soil borings. It works based on your calculations, but it goes into the field and it's not maintained. They get clogged up by any type of sediment or sands, and it just becomes a real problem for enforcement down the road. So I'm not sure if there's a better way to address it in terms of having positive drainage out to the street, if you have to take a look at the grades in the back. But it seems like you're asking the parking lot to fill up substantially before you have that relief in the event of this underground system not performing as per that greater than 20 inches per hour rate that we're relying on.
I would like to add to that. My concern would also be at the 0 foot stand up, what kind of issues you would have there, like if you have sediment transport, or you would need erosion control, since all you have there, you're just going to put a fence up against those two buildings. So you would be funneling the flow right between here. Is that the 0 foot stand up question?
No, I think that was a bit of a misnomer before.
Okay,
residential buffers to the east. No, you're right. That is, the number is correct.
Oh, okay.
It's to the east and some of the top. There's no residential buffers. And I believe actually it is also to the northeast, because there's
to the right on the screen.
Yes, the right side is east and the northeast. At the 158 First Avenue project, the rear of the property was technically a residential. So this is the right, this is the government building. This is still part of And where you pointed on the top of the page, there's no the
way. The elevation runs this way, right?
Yes, but at that point, it actually, where we're grading it, it comes off of that north property line towards
the. So you can do that like 22, that 21, yes. And
do that 19, 18. Right, but ultimately the inlet's on the lowest
point. Yeah, okay.
With regards to constructability at that zone boundary, you have your row of, is that compact parking? Right on the property line, I'm seeing a proposed fence, curb, and that 18-foot deep stall. I'm having trouble understanding horizontally how we can afford all that space and not eat into the that minimum depth parking stall.
Yeah, so we have at the back of the curb is the property line, and you have your 6-inch curb. Within that curb will be the fence will have to be constructed within the curb, and then you have the parking spaces, and then it's 18 feet into the drive aisle. We do provide concrete wheel stops, not only along this fence, but anywhere where the parking spaces are heading right along the building. You know, that we understand that that's, you know, right on the property line, that's the request of the board, but it is as described.
But physically, it could be built as proposed and not shorten the bare minimum aisle width at the pinch point by the driveway or that minimum 18-foot stall depth. Is that what you're saying?
We feel it can be constructed. I think it's of my opinion not to compromise the 24-foot aisle width. So there's no issues with cars going back and forth across each other. I'm not sure I understand.
So the dimensioning, the dimensioning for the exit, the driveway, at 24 feet.
Yeah.
That accounts for 24 feet of aisle, 18 feet of unimpeded parking stall depth. Curb and fence before you are on or over the property line.
Correct. Is that first parking spot even accessible from a turn radius getting into that driveway there? With a I'll leave the traffic engineer to answer that from a passenger vehicle. Yes, we don't see an issue with a vehicle getting in there.
And let's just say you did remove two spots from that side. That would make all compliant standard parking spots.
Right. If you removed two spots. Did you look at compact spaces?
Yeah.
And then just space the rest out? I don't know off the top of my head, but you know. You remove two of those spaces, 16 feet.
Yeah, so it would be more than two. Three.
Right, so the compact stalls are not desirable. They're not permitted by our code, and they're not permitted by our size.
I think we could agree it's not a good idea to put 12 pounds of stuff in a 10-pound bag, whether that's a paper bag or a Gucci bag, you know. It's probably better suited for an 8-pound bag, really.
Mr. Chairman, our traffic expert, Mr. Chen, is here tonight to work with the board specifically for the traffic issues when the traffic consultant comes up. But I believe there are some questions he may have with regards to this witness.
That's true, Mr. Chairman. Can we go back to the intersection of that driveway triangles that you have on the exhibit? I have a hard time reading, even from here, reading what it says for the intersection site distance triangle in terms of its length and its speed. Could you elaborate on that?
Sure. And this is all on the site plan set. So I'll read from the plan. So we have access to the site, they're all rated at 25 miles per hour, whether it's right turn or left turn. And they're listed as 280 feet. So this is for the driveway on East Garfield.
My next question, but usually the intersection type triangles are designed to the design speed and not the posted speed of a roadway. So I was just wondering, what is the, did you consider that the design speed when creating intersection site distance triangles? Because this could affect your design as you designed, it appears that you designed the building to that intersection site distance triangle. So I just wanted to see how you capture the intersection site distance triangle from that perspective.
It's based on the posted speed, Mr. Chen, but we have some exploring to do as a team, but we can look at the design speed and see how it affects the site distance triangle. And that's something that's more for our traffic consultant, but we're happy to look at it together.
Mr. Chairman, I only asked that question because I wanted to make sure that if they were designing that building to the intersection site distance triangle, that the intersection site distance triangle that they use is appropriately depicted there. Questions? I have no further questions from this witness.
That's all I have at this point.
Will we have another chance to
put in the... Before we have a motion, Mike, did you have...
No, I just wanted to ask Mr. Ward a couple of questions. Mr. Ward, from an engineering perspective, you're dealing with a lot that's in the CBD zone, which requires 10,000 square foot lots as a minimum.
Mm-hmm.
That's correct. The lot you're working with is 19,900 plus or minus square feet. Is that correct?
That's correct.
So is that double the size of the required minimum?
That's correct.
Now, this lot, you've said you're going to clear completely all the current improvements are gone. So it's a blank space at that point.
Correct.
Blank. Okay. So, and this lot is relatively rectangular in shape. Would you agree with that?
I would.
Okay. So the shape is regular. So it's not narrow, is it?
No, not by more than standard.
No, not shallow either.
I think it's a relative term. It's in line with the zone boundary at the rear.
Okay. And are there any, its topography is relatively flat?
No. I would say that topography is actually kind of unusually, well, I say usually steep for land pounds, that's a misnomer. But unusually steep for First Avenue in that the rear property line is about 4 feet higher than First Avenue. So that's a little more elevation relief than we usually have.
Okay. Is it near any environmental features such as streams, or waterways, ponds, anything of that nature?
It is not.
So from an engineering standpoint, which came first, the chicken or the egg? Were you asked to design a site without having first been shown and given an architectural set of plans to design the site of land?
So, We prepare our site plan documents based on the architectural plans that were developed.
Okay. So you're given plans, and for that you're able to engineer the site so that it works.
Correct. Our goal was to make the site work from a construction standpoint, but also from a functionality standpoint based on that design.
And generally, if you were given something smaller, would you still be able to design the site?
A smaller building?
Right.
Yeah, sure.
Okay. And if the building was small enough, you might be able to comply with, let's say, the lot coverage requirements at 75%, or the usable floor area ratios, and the other zone variances that have been asked for here. With a smaller building, you could design an engineer a site for that.
Yeah, I think to answer that, but that could be a blanket statement applied to any property. But yes, if there is a way to comply with this site and any other site. But yes, on this one particularly, yes.
Okay, thank you. That's it. Time to wrap up.
Sure. Is there anything before we call closure?
No, I mean, we'll have all our witnesses back.
So,
members of the public who are interested in this application, this is going to be carried to Albert 3, 2023, at 7 o'clock p.m. in the same room. You need to be here back here at that date and time when this application will continue. There will be, this witness will continue his testimony. He's subject to further questions from the board and from the public. And there will be several other witnesses as well that will have the opportunity to hear, question, and comment as to their testimony. If there's any further notice, this is the only notice we're going to get, so be here at that date and time.
I'll second that motion.
Oh, yeah.